Can I get a Coke? Can I get a Coke?
President caught among us saying other things that are highly criticized today by certain, by many of us, that he also asked for his Coke in the middle of his discussion with the Michael Cohen. You need a Coke to get through that. So we have, this is the Ro Khan Show with me, Anna DeVellantis. Richard Roper is here today. Ro is on special assignment in Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
Really?
He will be checking in on the program, we're told, at the big aviation get together out there with all the he'll
Such
be checking
geek.
In let us know. I know, and I love it, but I love hearing his stories, so he's gonna check in with us. no big deal. He will be checking in later on in the 4:30 out half hour.
We booked him. We got Ro Khan.
We were able to, last time though we were not
Phoner?
Able to get
I know.
Him. The last time, you remember that?
Yeah.
He was when he was gone doing his trip around Lake Michigan trying to survey the whole area, took a weather photo for Tom Skilling climbing up that tree of the beautiful sunset. And surveyed the area he wants to put a tarp on the lake of, but we didn't get him then. So we got him today. Yeah. And it is a fascinating thing he's taking part in. So he'll tell us all about that. Joe Donlan from WGN-TV will be checking in just a few minutes here.
Good.
City Hall, very busy day today. It's weird when, you know, you go on social media and you see Chicago City Hall trending. Because there's some things happening that people actually care about and they're weighing in about. Ida B. Wells was one of the big things that came out, renaming Congress Parkway.
Right.
Ida B. Wells. So that happened today. Also, Alderman Munoz announced he was going to retire a couple days ago, but on the way out now, he made a final push for an ordinance that would change the way Chicago police create that gang database and the way it is held, the way it, he says it unfairly targets certain people and that they can't put their past behind them. And he says, as a former thug and hustler,
That's
his
right.
words,
yeah,
himself.
Ricardo himself, very fascinating backstory. I remember meeting him just after he became an alderman many, many years ago.
Right. Mayor Daley plucked him to take that post when he's 27.
He was very forthcoming even then about his own past.
Said, it shouldn't come in the way of get in the way of me taking on this post. And my life is better now. I've turned a corner. And he's sort of fighting for others who may make this list. And what he's proposing, we'll talk a little bit about that coming up with Joe Donlan. Tom Skilling is here.
Hey.
We love talking to Tom about all things, including Chicago is one of the top 10 dog-friendly cities. And I know you're a dog owner, and I'm a new dog owner. And Tom Skilling loves dogs. He's got a couple of them, three, I think. And so we're going to talk to him about that.
Fantastic.
As well.
Can't wait to hear about that.
Is that your experience that it's a dog friendly city? I think I'm just 8 months into my little puppy, and
you
I think
know, I've got a few things to say about that.
All right, we'll hear that.
The people are very dog friendly in Chicago. Chicago itself, hit and miss, so to speak.
Right.
There are some shockingly anti-dog places. In fact, I once went around with a camera crew and just recorded all the signs that said no dogs allowed. I still haven't finished that documentary, but
not even your little Jaxie.
No,
that's like what,
exactly.
8-10 pounds of love.
And I took him with, so it looked like he was reading all the signs. Like it was like a little, you know, when you go to see the Pixar movies, and there's always a little Pixar short before the feature length film. That's what this looked like—a live action version of that called "No Dogs Allowed."
No dogs allowed.
Yeah,
all right. Well, we have to bring that as the conversation. Lester
Absolutely.
Holt, the anchor of NBC Nightly News, will be here to talk about Senators grilling Secretary of State Pompeo right now on foreign affairs, trying to get some more information about these behind the closed doors meetings that the president has had with both Putin and Kim Jong-un, and trying to ask, so, you know, how want to make sure we're on track for our policy. You know, what is it? And let's find out a little more information about what happened.
Foreign affairs. And then, of course, there's always something going on with domestic affairs when it comes to the Donald, too, right?
There is.
Give me a Coke. Who are we paying? Who do I make the check out to?
Well, today it's, you know, it got weirder because Omarosa, it has been revealed this afternoon, has been questioned by the feds over another National Enquirer deal tied to Michael Cohen, the fixer for the president. The feds are already looking into AMI, the parent company of National Enquirer, and apparently she was involved in a deal to kill or change a story involving her brother, who was unfortunately murdered. She was given a job.
Right,
that was the negotiation. And then the story and things went away. Cohen apparently right firmly in the middle of that. So she is in the spotlight again. Plus, she has a new seven-figure book deal with Simon & Schuster to tell all. And she says she's got a lot to tell.
There's a glut. You know, this happens with, I will say, though, this happens with every administration, right? As soon as people leave, they write books. It's not unique. But you know, do we really, seven figures? Is the publisher going to make that
amazed.
Back, Anna, on the Omarosa book?
I was amazed.
I mean, she's kind of an open, I mean, well, you know, Spicy's out there, you know, promoting the heck out of his book. Uh-huh. Judge Jeanine. I mean, these are, Spicy was in the administration. Judge Jeanine's just very friendly.
To the administration.
To the administration. But there's a lot of books out there.
Yeah, well, remember she went on Good Morning America and basically did a shameless plug, said nothing but teased the fact that I have a story to tell. This is the story she has to tell, so we're talking about that as well. Nick Schmaltz will be here as we head into the Blackhawks convention weekend, starting this Friday through Sunday. We always love being out there, and we're all going to be out there broadcasting live. That'll be fun. And then we have to talk about Mars and this new discovery, what it means. Because this one seems, you know, it's really striking the scientific community as being a big breakthrough. So we'll find out why that is as well. But we're going to break here because in just a few minutes here, we're going to talk with Joe Donlan, cool. Principal Anchor at WGN-TV. And let's head over to Judy Pilek, find out what's coming up in the bottom of the hour here on WGN-TV News, WGN Radio News.
Wow. I thought I got a new job. What a video of a fatal Chicago police shooting shows.
Violetta, time for traffic trouble spots. Let's check in with you.
Hey, head off the beaten path to a secluded region brimming with natural beauty. Cruising Indiana Thursday on WGN-TV News. That's at 9, of course.
We're going to cruise over to Joe Donlan at WGN-TV. Cool. Joe, we want to talk to you a little bit about all the activity at City Hall today. Quite a busy day. And give me a second, Joe. Now we can hear you.
Okay. Before we go there, I just wanted to wish you a belated happy birthday.
Oh, thank you, Joe. It was a great day. It ended so well. I laid maybe 100 hints about it being National Tequila Day and my birthday. And so by the end of the show, Violetta and her sister were very sweet and were able to deliver the most delicious margaritas.
You don't have to ask us a couple of times.
That's true.
Man, that's what you call workplace happiness.
Nicely done,
hey,
right?
I'm curious, did your husband get you anything?
He did. You know what's funny? Because he ran out for a business meeting first thing in the morning at 6:30, and I was all disappointed because he didn't even like give me a kiss and say happy birthday, didn't acknowledge it. I'm like, did he forget? And then he came back at lunch, and he had this big bouquet of flowers and this nice gift for me. And it was my daughter wrote me on her own without being prodded by anyone, made a little card that was
nice.
So cute. So why
I'm
did you ask that, Joe?
Because, you know, you get to this point in a marriage where you say,
you're whatever.
Help me out here. Right. No, look, don't get me anything. Let's just go out to dinner or whatever, right? Because it's kind of, what do you get your spouse? So it does.
It's true.
You're not at that point yet.
So what about you? Are you at that point where you're sort of like, happy birthday, honey?
Like, happy birthday.
Diamonds. You get them diamonds.
Yeah, let's go out and have a nice dinner. You know, I don't need anything. You know, I don't want anything. It gets awkward, right? But you haven't gotten to that point.
No, I'm not at the point of expectation either. So I think he knows. It's sort of like, hey, little gift is nice on the birthday. Just made me feel special, right?
Yes.
You know, I try to make everyone in the family feel special year round.
A little something.
It's nice to appreciate the mom.
Yes.
Well, thank God for social media now, because you'll get a reminder, even on Facebook, your spouse has a birthday today. So
it's
really hard to forget it now, guys.
He might have gotten an alert on his phone. Actually, now I think you just busted him. I thought he just was in a rush to get out the door, but maybe it was what you say,
Well, that's
Richard.
What happens with me. My sisters always remind me of the people in my life I need to wish happy birthday to, because they're like, hey, idiot, your Facebook friend. Also, your girlfriend is having a birthday. Or even Ro. That's how I remembered Ro's birthday. Three people in my family. It's Ro's birthday.
Just so you know. Great. I had an alert on Facebook. Don't forget.
The birthdays are fine. It's the anniversaries that are fine.
Oh, can't miss those, Joe.
I missed that? I missed a big one, too. I think it was the 15th. I forgot.
Were you out, like, working on assignment or something? I mean, what was the reason?
Kids, we were on a road trip, yes, and I completely forgot the anniversary.
Oh, boy.
And I realized it when I opened up what I thought was the lunch bag, and there was a beautiful note from my wife wishing me a happy anniversary, and I went, palm face, duh.
At least it wasn't also the lock that she had changed because you had forgotten,
that's right.
Joe.
That's the good news, right. So we've had a number of anniversaries since then.
And you have not forgotten any of those.
No, I have not. But
good for you.
I have lost my wedding ring like 4 times.
I've done that. See,
and
that's
of course,
just, that's
the
a thing.
One I can't lose. I got at the mall for $10.
Wow.
So you keep that one. That's the issue, right? It's just when you're so nervous about what's going to happen to it, you take it off at times when you're worried and forget what you put it. I got it. So I want to get to this, though, because Alderman Munoz made quite the proposal today. This ordinance he's introducing to try to rein in the city's CPD gang database. And he's, you know, Richard and I were talking earlier. He himself said, self-described thug and hustler, because he has a criminal rap sheet himself, but he was able to reform his life and start anew. And he says that there's some restrictions here. If you're on this list for life, can you petition if you're on it unfairly? He sees some problems here.
Well, as I understand the ordinance, it would prohibit CPD from adding any more names to that list, the database, until unless the inspector general somehow determines that the law enforcement benefit outweighs the potential damage to the people who are on this list. It's been controversial for some time now, and in fact there's a lawsuit that's been filed now that's claiming it's unconstitutional, but critics say this is just another example of racial profiling. The disproportionate number of people on this list and in this database are people of color. Rick Munoz wants to change it and at least look at it deeper. And I think one of the options is to give people an opportunity to first be notified that they're on this list and in this database, and second, the opportunity to get off of it.
That, I think, that part of it is fair. Notify people, let them know. Now, it isn't a public list in any way. We should make that clear. Police use this, and they say it's a powerful tool that helps them know what they're rolling up on.
But very few databases, as you guys know, very few databases are 100% accurate. You know, there are many common names. There could be people just like no-fly list. Mm-hmm. You know, someone should get informed, because there could very well be some people on that list that have never been involved with gangs, who have simply been misidentified or somehow got caught in that. I think at the very least they should have the right to explain and say why they shouldn't be on the
database. Right, and Alderman Munoz says that it happens more frequently than you think, and there are major errors about the people on this list, such as somebody's on this list at the age of 113 or something like that. Obviously, that's an error. That's not their real age, and there are things on there. People who were picked up or arrested in a situation with a gang member, but they themselves were not a gang member. I think there is a pending lawsuit about a case involving someone like that. I know the police think that, you know, this is a very powerful tool, though, and that they would be at a loss without knowing what they're rolling up on at a scene, not knowing that someone is a member potentially of a gang, knowing that they are known to carry illegal weapons and the kinds of things that may help a police officer. Are you a sex offender? Are you a felon, multiple felon? Do you have a lengthy rap sheet? You know, who is this person? And that's the reason they say they use it, and it's very powerful.
Well, and some critics, I think, would argue that they don't know what they're rolling up on, and that unless they have a specific address or they see a suspect that they know. And my guess is that a lot of these officers who work in these areas where there are high crime rates, they know a lot of the people. They know the gang members they're dealing with. They know the gangs they're dealing with. And again, from Alderman Munoz's point, it's more a matter of, in his case even, he said, I might even be on it, and I don't even know. So
that's
can I get a chance to at least know and get off of it?
Mm-hmm. And I guess you can see that point, that the fairness.
More than 12,000 names are people over 50. Doesn't mean that when you're over 50, you're not involved, but more and more likely that, you know, those could be some people who haven't been involved in any nefarious activity for 25-30 years.
I think that is a great point. If at some point you have turned your life around and you were convicted or had petty crimes in your past, at what point can you remove your name and say, look, I'm an upstanding citizen now. That was the past, just like Alderman Munoz. So he's fighting for that. Well, I know the Inspector General, Joe Ferguson, though, he's going to be issuing a couple of reports, one by the end of this year, to even say if this database is allowed at all.
So we'll know a lot more at that point. And, you know, I talked with an FBI source the other day who said so much is made of MS-13. Do you know how many documented MS-13 members there are in the country? 10,000. Do you know how many known or, according to this database, gang members there are, domestic gang members in Chicago? That number is upwards of 100,000.
Wow.
So, I don't know. It's a big problem, and I guess we'll find out more soon about how it'll be dealt with by police.
Now, you at WGN-TV have a special report tonight, I know, about Ida B. Wells, and City Council today did approve the renaming of Congress Parkway to Ida B. Wells. Is it street?
I think it's Parkway.
Parkway. Okay.
Yes.
Congress Parkway to Ida B. Wells Parkway.
Yes. And it's interesting. The timing is fortunate for us because we have a special report running tonight on Ida B. Wells. We went down to Montgomery, Alabama to see the newest memorial called the Memorial for Peace and Justice. I'm not sure if you guys have heard about this or seen it. It opened in April, and it is the first memorial of its kind to really take a look at the legacy of slavery and mainly the racial terror of lynching. And what you're looking at here is Michelle Duster, if you're watching us on CLTV. We took Michelle Duster down. She's Ida B. Wells' great-granddaughter.
Wow.
And we walked through the memorial with her. And it's really quite haunting. There are large steel monuments that are shaped like coffins. And the deeper you get into this memorial, the higher those monuments get over your head, to where they're hanging just to represent the lynching. And on those monuments are the names and the counties where the people who died in those states and counties. So it's a very powerful and emotional trip through this very dark chapter in our history. And we make that trip through Michelle Duster's family history as well to look at Ida B. Wells and her impact on the ending of racial injustice and her documentation of all of the lynchings, thousands of them, and her fight to change that.
Yeah, anti-lynching crusader, also a civil rights icon, journalist, and someone who fought for women's right to vote here in the state of Illinois, got that years before the rest of the nation because of her efforts. So,
A lot of people know her from the Ida B. Wells homes.
That's right.
Of course, and those were torn down in the early 2000s. But Michelle is talking about an effort that she has underway right now to build a monument to Ida B. Wells down at 37th and Langley in the neighborhood, an area where Ida B. Wells spent a lot of her time. Her home is still there, as a matter of fact. So they have raised quite a bit of money for that. They're trying to get to $300,000, and they're hoping that by this time next year there will be this monument to Ida B. Wells right there at 37th and Langley, in addition to now the new street name.
The new parkway. Sounds fitting. Thank you, Joe. What time will we see that report on the WGN TV News?
That's on tonight at 9 o'clock. It's our cover story.
All right. Thank you very much,
Thanks, Joe.
Good talking with you. Tom Skilling is up after the break. But first, let's head over to Judy Pilot, get the news. This is The Rokan Show with Vienna DeVlantis. Richard Roper here with us this afternoon. Glad you're in with us, Rich.
And Anna, I want to tell the folks out there, keep listening after 4:30. That's when Nick Schmaltz is going to join us with Chicago Blackhawks, of course. It's going to be your chance to win a family four-pack of passes to the 11th annual Blackhawks Convention at the Hilton Chicago, July 27th through the 29th. That's courtesy of Mathnasium, changing lives through math. Get convention passes at ChicagoBlackhawks.com.
Of course, we'll be out there at the Blackhawks Convention having a good time again this year. More on that coming up with Nick Schmaltz. He's going to talk to us about the convention and much more, what's ahead for the season ahead and all the high expectations for the Hawks. But let's check in with Tom Skilling, sponsored by PermaSeal Basement Systems. Hi, Tom.
Tom is there.
And Tom is there. Here it is. Hi, Tom.
Are you? Happy Wednesday.
There's
Happy
Tom
Wednesday
right
to you,
there.
Tom.
You know, Tom, I was thinking before we get to all the exciting weather stuff, we were just talking to Joe Donlan about the Congress Parkway is going to become a Wells Parkway. But Tom, here's what I'm a little worried about. And I'm especially worried for Violetta, because you're going to have Wells Parkway, which actually will intersect with Wells Street.
How are they going to work that out?
Wells.
Wow. That's a good point.
Wells.
It all gets a little bit complex and confusing, doesn't it? Or could.
I think they'll start calling it Ida B.
Ida B.
You're going to go with Ida B? So the parkway will be Ida B, and then Wells Street will remain Wells Street?
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking,
you know, Wells.
I have great faith in Violetta. I think Violetta will handle this.
That's great.
Thank you, Tom. You're the only one.
Well, no, I don't think so. I think Richard feels the same
deep
way.
Deep down, he does.
Yes,
I do.
Deep down. That's right.
Sure,
I know
he
Anna does.
I do. Well, Violetta delivered me a birthday margarita, so she can do no wrong in my book yesterday.
How did the
it was
the
very nice, Tom. It was. There were more margaritas after that. The extended family, the sisters and their families took me out to a Mexican restaurant, and all the kiddos had their quesadillas, and the mommies had our margaritas.
Wow.
So it was a very nice evening.
Good.
It's just how it should be.
Nothing outbound at the end of the night.
No, it was very, very, very fun. Fine and controlled, as far as anyone knows. It was all good.
That's wonderful.
We also were talking, Tom Skilling, about the Chicago, the city of Chicago, being named one of the top dog-friendly cities in America. And you know, we're all dog lovers right here. Richard, me, and you, and owners.
Yes.
And I think it's pretty cool, because most of the cities on this list, the top 10, were out west, and they were like year-round weather cities. But Chicago apparently takes care of business, even though, you know, it's friendly to dogs.
You know, Anna, it's interesting you bring that up, because every time I drive across town, I think it's the funniest thing. You'll sit there at an intersection waiting for the light to change, and everybody's got their little dogs, and they come in all sizes, all shapes, all colors, and they're just trotting along very happily with, at the end of a leash, like this is the way life should be, and they're very happy about it. And all I can think is they all seem quite happy.
Right.
You know?
Well, they looked at dog parks, walkability, dog-friendly stores, bars, and restaurants. I thought that was interesting because just last week, I was a little startled. I went to Bloomingdale's, the Medina, the place where you used to go see the circus when we were all growing up. Now, the beautiful home store there. I love it. I was in the basement floor where they have, bedding, and I was looking for beach towels and stuff. And this man walks in with a German Shepherd, a ginormous dog. And I thought, I didn't know this place was dog-friendly. And sure enough, I asked one of the people there. I was like, is it dog-friendly here? And they said, yeah. Sure.
Oh, I'm surprised. Well, there are some people that just bring their dogs everywhere. They don't care.
And no one tells them anything?
And then they're like, oh, this is my service pup. And it's like, no, it's not.
No, it's not. We know that. It's not.
But what I was talking about earlier, Tom, and look, that is true. But, it's kind of surprising to me how many places in Chicago are not dog friendly. And the first place I think of is the entirety of Millennium Park.
Where
Maggie Daly and the whole area, where Maggie Daly, of course, was a huge animal lover. And it's kind of surprising to me that there isn't at least some section there. And if you are with your dog, as I found out,
right,
the hard way, there's those security people on Segways
will
materialize out of nowhere. And I'll be like, listen. There's a guy in that fountain bathing right over there.
And you're worried
and
about my dog?
You don't care about my 7.5-pound dog. That's the problem.
I know.
So.
But you know, Richard, you raise an interesting point because I took our dogs out. And I was up by Kathy Osterman Beach up on the north end of the lakefront here. And I had no idea dogs were banned, when the lifeguards were out there. And I was told in no uncertain terms, no dogs on the beach. Now, they do have the dog beach at Foster Avenue there, and
right, and Montrose Beach.
I think there's one at Montrose, too. Yeah.
Big beach. It's like four acres set off just for doggies to go and play.
Right.
And I'm always amazed.
You know what, though? I have to, because I wanted to take my dog there. You need a permit. It's not called a permit, but it's called something to have your dog there.
Yeah.
At Montrose?
At the beach, yeah. It's,
interesting.
It's like a, I don't know. And they said you can get it from your vet or a vet, which I didn't have time to do. So, yeah, that was weird.
Is it to prove you have the vaccinations and that kind of thing?
Which is good. Yeah, it
but
is
you wouldn't expect that.
No, so I couldn't go.
You need papers for your dog.
Exactly.
You don't realize that you're supposed to have that. I know.
Right.
I was surprised when they came up to me and said, no dogs here, because... I used to go out before the beaches were open. We'd take the dogs out, and little Callie would run through the water. She had a heck of a time, and they'd meet other dogs, and it was all a very friendly encounter. And yet, I learned very quickly, with the same surprise that, Judy, you sound like you had when you were approached asking for paperwork at the dog beach. I didn't realize that, so I've learned something here from you.
They said when the lifeguard is present, you're not allowed to have your dog out there?
Yeah.
Was that the explanation?
And I suppose the rationale there is, some people are afraid of dogs. And you know how dogs are. They'll run up to people, playfully and all the rest. But that scares some people. My mother was like that. She said, as a little girl, a neighbor's dog ran at her, and she had been frightened about them ever since. And yet, she deliberately went out and adopted a dog because she didn't want her children to be afraid of them the way she was. Yeah.
And how many dogs do you have, Tom?
We have two.
Oh, two.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You had three.
We had three. And the two of them did not get along, and it was recommended that one of the dogs was liked his own her own yard and so forth.
Yeah, kind of two alpha males or alpha
exactly. Females. Well, they're all females.
Females.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. But so it broke my heart. But she's. I was just sent some pictures the other day. She's doing wonderfully in her foster home.
Good.
Yeah,
she was adopted to a foster home.
She was
for a little while. Oh, that's good.
Through the Paws people, and they do a wonderful job.
Oh, they
job.
Do. Gosh, they do. Their spay and neuter clinic single-handedly has reduced the over pet population here. Overpopulation of pets. So we are tip of the hat to Paula Faseas and everybody over there. And it's a great place to adopt a dog.
Oh my god! And there's so many beautiful dogs, and it's unfortunate sometimes. sometimes too, because of course we all want puppies, but sometimes there's some beautiful, wonderful dogs that are 5 or 6 or 7 for whatever reason are without a home. Maybe their owner passed away or something happened, something changed, and boy, it's nice if you can rescue one of those dogs as well.
Well, and they give you, they're tremendous at giving you the background for the dogs too, so that you know what, you know, this dog isn't good with kids, or this dog is used to being with an elderly you know, couple, or you know, this is not high energy and stuff, so you can really make your decisions. And they just do such a good job.
It's true.
Such a good job.
It's so true.
I will say, though, Tom, is the city, you know, Chicagoans, and I mean the Chicago area, and they are the friendliest to dogs. You walk your dog, and it's like very few people don't at least smile when they see a pup. You know? And I love it when the little ones, you know, because my dog is small, and they're like, so they got somebody their own size, you know, and it's so cute.
I know.
And I walk my puppy around. She's 8 months now, and around the neighborhood, and it's like I feel like she's the therapy puppy for the whole neighborhood, because everyone comes and says, "Oh, I'm just on my way to work. Can I pet your dog?"
It is so true.
There's something about them.
It is so interesting to watch them. I, you know, I notice as the weather heats up, they automatically go into this slower mode. You know, it's like this is how the species, I'm sure, has survived all
these
years.
It's almost as if there could be like a phrase, Tom, for like the late days of summer, and then the dogs kind of.
Richard, what would you think about something like the dog days of summer?
That's a good one. You can have that one, Tom. Yeah. That's for you.
Great. Thank you. So are we in the dog days of summer yet?
Well, I don't think technically we are. You tend to
feels
think
great
August
out there.
Is there. Oh, it is. It is beautiful. You know, the irony is that our weather pattern is being dictated by this incredible hot dome out east of us. Mm. And in fact, it's affecting the whole country, because what happens is the jet stream buckles around that, and it turns northwest here. So it kind of buffers us. Protects us from the full onslaught of heat. So we bring Canadian air masses down here, which tend to be far more tolerable, lower humidity and all the rest. We're going to get into that the next couple of days. Mm. However, you know, we've had an extraordinary number of 90-degree days. We're at the top tier of years in having had 90s. We've had 15 at O'Hare, 17 at Midway, and 8 is like what's normal now.
Wow.
So we ran it through the computer. We said, what kind of weather has occurred? How many 90s have we had from this point forward? Because we don't see any in the short term. And it turns out that the average is 15 90-degree days from this point forward in years that have had a comparable number of 90s. And the number actually ranges anywhere from 3 to as many as 29. There's about a 75% chance, based on weather history here, that we'll see 10 or more additional 90s, and about a 40% chance of 15 or more additional 90s. So the hot weather is not over, even though in the short term we're going to turn a little bit cooler and less
humid. That somehow doesn't sound so bad, though. 15 or maybe 10 more 90-degree days.
Well, to give you an idea, that would be like doubling what we've had so far. So if you take the all the 90s we've had so far, this would suggest that weather history suggests that we'll probably have as many 90s yet to come. So, you know, don't, if you're one of these hot weather folks,
like
it's
Bill
not over
in
yet.
Your weather office.
Oh, absolutely.
He's doing the happy dance.
He is. Mm-hmm. Although he tells me, Bill lives in Elmhurst, and he told all of his neighbors, put the air conditioners away, the 90s are over. But Bill plays this. Bill plays this game with Mother Nature where he says that, and he's like daring Mother Nature to produce some additional ones. So there's a little psychology going on there.
Yes.
I don't think he really believes it. Yeah. And I asked him, he told me in March there would be no 90s this year. And I said, how's that gone over with the neighbors who packed up the air conditioners and put them in their garages?
He can't do that.
I know.
That's terrible.
I kid Bill all the time. Yeah. He kids me about going to Alaska.
He's like, why would you want to do that?
I know. I told him, you know, when I hear there's a temperature of 120 in Phoenix, my view is that's 120 reasons not to go to Phoenix.
Well, there is a heat wave right now.
Terrible one. Yeah,
California, Southern California area?
127 at Death Valley yesterday, 122 at Palm Springs. Phoenix hit 116. I was looking. Phoenix has had only 3 days since May 28th where the temperature hasn't reached or exceeded 100.
Wow.
Can you believe that?
No. No, I can't. I mean, and the temperatures just sound astounding.
If only the basketball team there had the kind of nickname that would reflect
what
that.
What would you call it?
What could we call them, Tom? The Phoenix? What could we call them?
How about
the Heat's
Suns,
taken?
Right?
Okay, Suns.
There's another phrase.
Totally works.
Right.
We're helping the world with this.
Boy, this Richard, he is just...
Get away with those words.
Knocking him out of the ballpark.
Death Valley. It's 127. If only there was a name for a
Why
valley
would you call it Death
where the
valley?
Temperatures were so hot they could kill you.
I know. Jeez. I wonder why a valley where it's 127 has been named Death Valley.
You never die there?
I love the language.
So we'll talk about the showers that you mentioned. Should we be concerned with those, the ones moving in?
30-40% coverage in the pre-dawn hours and maybe an hour or two into tomorrow. But other than that, if we get through that period without them, we're okay. And we then we'll bring some more in Saturday night or Sunday. But they, too, look scattered. I can't help but say, we're sitting pretty in this country. You've got flooding rains on the East Coast. 30 million people touched by those. You've got 40 million. And then you got 30 million in the heat out in the West. And here we are sitting in between in pretty good shape, all things considered. So.
And last winter, it was the East Coast that got pummeled with those multiple blizzards.
I know.
That's true. But is the rain going to interfere with our weekend this weekend? We've had a little bit of a... that last weekend, wasn't it? It was fairly...
You know what? Look at the way the rains occurred last week, and they came and went, and yet, you know, people could get out between them and all. I think this weekend looks terrific. Saturday will be great. And Sunday, you know, what showers we get will come and go. They'll not be all-day things. So, you know, you'll have a chance to sneak out between them.
Good.
So it doesn't look bad.
All right, Tom. Always good talking with you.
Anna, good to talk to you. You too, Richard.
Thank
and guys. You have a good one.
You too. Tom Skilling, sponsored by PermaSeal Basement Systems. See you, Tom.
Bye-bye, Anna. See ya.
Let's check in with Judy Pilak now. Find out what's happened top of the hour here in the news.
The U.S. and EU agree to work to resolve U.S. tariffs on steel and aluminum imports.
Time for traffic trouble spots. Here's Violetta Podramatic.
Hey, the Steve Cochran Show has free White Sox tickets for you tomorrow at 7:20 a.m.
Coming up, Lester Holt of the NBC Nightly News will bring us up to speed on what's happening in Washington right now, as senators continue to press Secretary of State Mike Pompeo on foreign affairs. Much going on there. Some other stories also nationally. Then we're going to talk to Nick Schmaltz about the Blackhawks convention. And we'll play News or Ruse.
Oh, boy.
Our chance to redeem ourselves from that embarrassment we had last week. Rich, you think we can do it?
I don't remember that.
Judy's News coming up in 2 minutes.
The transcript makes it quite clear at the end that President Trump says, quote, don't pay with cash. Cohen then interrupts and says, no, 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 I got it. And then you hear distinctly, if you're careful and you slow it down, check.
Everybody heard just now Donald Trump say the word cash, cash. There's no way that Mr. Giuliani, who knows from being U.S. attorney, the only people who use cash are drug dealers and mobsters.
Ooh, that was Rudy Giuliani first there, defending the president, then Lanny Davis, who is Michael Cohen's attorney, a Clinton, also a defendant of Clinton's at one point. Quite a clash here, for sure. We've got a lot to get to there. Revealing some false statements from the president's campaign, I think those tapes do. That's that audio recording of a meeting between Donald Trump, before he was president, and with Michael Cohen, his attorney, the president not happy with that, sending out a tweet saying, so sad, who actually tapes, what attorney tapes any kind of recording with their client, not happy with it. But we this is The Ro Khan Show with me, Anna DeVellantes. Richard Roper is here, and we are going to check in with one of our favorites, Lester Holt of NBC Nightly News. I know you'll be covering this on the NBC Nightly News tonight. The tapes, what do you make of them, Lester? I think a lot of people are saying, okay, I'm not sure what exactly we're hearing here, but it certainly is the first clearest evidence yet that Michael Cohen has turned on the president. He's not going to be defending him.
Yeah, I think that friendship, if it hasn't dissolved, is quickly on its way to dissolving. I mean, it's fascinating how a recording, now, albeit not a great quality recording, but people hear kind of what they want to hear in this case, and those who are looking for some legal jeopardy for the president, could, you know, experts say it could be in this whole notion of, it was 2 months after the election. Were they trying to influence the election with a payment? And legal experts we're talking to say it's not even a question whether the payment was actually made. If they agreed to do something to conspire, and they take any kind of step in that direction, it could be considered a crime without the payoff. But the other suggestions from legal experts is that this is just one little piece that by itself it wouldn't stand as a strong piece of evidence either way. It would need corroboration, some sense of context. But it is fascinating. We do hear the president's voice on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lester, when you mentioned telephone calls and intent, you know, you almost feel like it could be Blago-esque, if you will.
Right.
Yeah, well, who knows where it's going? But I mean, you know, remember this is a whole separate, you know, U.S. attorney matter from the Mueller case, and you know whether the two ever intersect, you know, remains to be seen. But it is a whole; it represents potentially a whole new area of legal jeopardy for the president.
Well, I think one of the things that has come out through various analysts throughout the day is that the reason this was released was solely because of the word cash, because Rudy Giuliani, the representing the president, had defended him by saying, "Well, look, these are going to be exculpatory. They're going to defend the president. They're going to show that not only did he just learn about it at this moment when Michael Cohen presented this payoff to Karen McDougal, the former Playboy centerfold, and the affair, that there was a payoff there. Not only did he just learn about it then, but he wanted it in check form. He wanted that there to be a check so that there was a record and that everything was on the up and up. This, I guess some are saying that clearly runs counter to that story.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a perception thing. I mean, whenever you talk about cash, you have the image of movies and suitcases full of cash. So in and of itself, it's not illegal to use cash in a case like this. But you're right, it does tend to raise some questions of whether there's some contradiction going on here.
There's also this issue of piercing the attorney-client privilege, because the president allowed this to be pierced over this issue. Apparently, there are lots of reasons that he might have, his legal team might have made that. Maybe he thought he'd lose it anyway. Maybe they thought it wasn't a problem. You do hear Rudy Giuliani saying the rest of the tapes, and there are at least 12 of them that the networks are reporting exist out there between Michael Cohen and the president. There are 12 of them out there, but Rudy Giuliani now is saying the president doesn't even appear on any of the remaining tapes. I suppose that also remains to be seen.
Yeah, that's another question. I mean, and that's what goes back to this notion that by itself, the legal experts believe this tape doesn't really prove anything one way or the other. That, but as one expert pointed out to me, you know, you don't just rob one bank. In this case, you don't just make one tape. That generally there are others that would follow. So you feel like you're just getting the just skimming off the top right now of this story. That there's much more to come, and it may be much more that simply makes it a non-issue, but. That remains to be seen.
It just seems like, what do you make of this so far, Lester? The fact that this tape is out there, the fact that there's this back and forth between Lanny Davis trying to prove Rudy Giuliani a liar and him defending the president. It seems like a lot's getting whipped up here, but we haven't really seen anything that is that indicting of the president.
Well, what you have seen, though, is certainly from Michael Cohen's side, you know, these warning shots that at least they appear to be warning shots going across the president's bow that, listen, I don't have your back anymore. I'm looking out for me and my family. And certainly the release of this tape suggests that his folks are trying to get out ahead here, trying to get some leverage on the president. Now, where that might lead, they're looking for a pardon or whatever, that's unclear. But clearly they're taking the initiative. What do they say, you know, a good defense is a good offense, or I may have that backwards, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, I do. And I guess it also does reveal that there were false statements from the president's campaign and from the president himself about these affairs. And a lot of people are brushing that off, saying, of course, all politicians lie about their affairs and that's not the issue.
Yeah, he still denies. He still denies. And yeah, I think with any of the women that have stepped forward or they're accused, he's maintained that denial.
It's curious, too, because Lanny Davis, representing Michael Cohen, has said that his client has turned a corner in his life and is no longer even seeking a pardon from Trump. It's it's interesting, and maybe that plays back to what you just said, Lester, in that he's just trying to see what he can do to protect himself and his family and stay out of jail or at least get a lighter jail sentence.
I mean, potentially more leverage is better than less leverage. Now, how or why they would use it is a bit unclear, but it's clear that somewhere along the line that, you know, whatever the feds have said, that he's had this notion that I've got to look out for number one in this case. And, any semblance of a friendship, I think, is between the two now is gone.
Let me just ask you quickly. It's been going on since we've been on the air here, too, and I know you'll be covering this tonight on the NBC Nightly News, but Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State, facing a grilling from senators on his Senate Foreign Relations Committee appearance. I haven't seen many fireworks. There are a few tense moments, but he does seem to be defending every word of the president and hasn't seemed to step into too much yet. Where have you seen, what are the highlights so far?
I think one of the highlights has been on the issue of what went on in that Trump-Putin meeting during that 2 hours in which no one was in there. He did get questioned on that. Some of the senators seem to be doubting that, whether Pompeo even knows what President Trump promised Putin, because, again, they were 2 hours behind closed doors without note takers. I think it was Senator Menendez says, well, what happened in those 2 hours? And Pompeo says, I've had a meeting, a number of conversations with the president about what transpired in the meeting. He says, did you speak to the translator who was at the meeting? He says, no, I haven't, Senator. I understand the game that you're playing. I get it. So there was a little bit of, poking at him on that issue because, the president has suggested what went on in that meeting, but no one really knows except the two translators.
Right, a tense exchange there, I guess, with Senator Bob Menendez you're referring to. Also, yeah. They were trying to nail him on specifics. What specifically did you do with North Korea when you met with Kim Jong-un about denuclearization? And the senators didn't seem to be getting any specifics about that, and also seemed frustrated that they weren't learning anything on that front.
Yeah, and but he went back to the administration line that they believe in complete verifiable complete denuclearization, and that's what they expect, and that they're making progress. He talked about the bit I've heard here. Keep in mind it's still going on, but he talked about his visits there and that this process is still underway. And as you know, there some critics are saying that summit was less than it at first appeared, but he is standing by his boss. Mm-hmm.
Lester, you mentioned offense and defense, an issue that has ebbed for a little bit, but now is heating up again as we head into the NFL season, of course, is the protest and either kneeling or showing other signs of protest during the national anthem. You had a chance and you sat down with Malcolm Jenkins, Super Bowl champion, all-pro safety for the Eagles. I think, Lester, we're going to play a little bit of a clip from that interview and then talk to you about it.
Sure.
Ultimately, these social issues you're dealing with are serious, they're deep, and I think most people recognize they have to be dealt with on some level. But is all this good for football?
That's not my concern. I mean, we can talk about social issues and still have a great game. We talk about domestic violence for a whole year. We had commercials, we had things on the field. Nobody had an issue with that. We talk about breast cancer for a whole month every year. We wear pink on the field, we do dedications, we have the moms out there before the game. No issues with that. When we start talking about black issues and issues of race, now all of a sudden, we just want football. We don't want all the extra stuff. We just want to watch the game.
Can't have it both ways.
No, you can't.
See, that's a great point by Malcolm Jenkins, who, as you know, Lester, has actually raised a fist, not taken a knee, for most of the last two seasons, I believe. Did he talk about whether he's going to continue to do that in the upcoming campaign?
I asked him specifically about whether, whether it's fist or taking the knee, whether it has any relevance or still, if it's, his thought that now we're moving on to solutions. He wasn't fully committed, but he seemed to suggesting we've moved perhaps past that. But I have to tell you, he's a very impressive, very thoughtful guy. He spent a lot of time immersing himself into issues of criminal justice reform, and he sat down with police officers and district attorneys trying to understand their side of it. And he believes that, some people say, hey, your football player played football. He believes they should have a platform. They should use it effectively for, social justice. So he is, we really, get into his mindset. Fascinating guy.
Yeah, he seems
Absolutely.
Like it. So does he believe the NFL is wrong and should change this policy entirely, allow them to kneel? It's a form of peaceful protest that should go on?
Well, he said, they had this one policy they put in place, and they just stepped back from it a week or so ago. He didn't like that. That was the one that you'd have to go in the locker room, if you didn't want to participate in the national anthem. He was upset about that because he says, for the last year and a half, we, being the players and the league, have really made a lot of progress. And, they've been watching what the players have been doing. They've, been trying to help. And then suddenly for the conversation to revert back to, we don't want you kneeling again, he was very disappointed by that. So I think where it stands right now is the Players Association and the league are trying to come up with some kind of acceptable policy. But the fact is, a lot of the teams, they want their players standing during the league, during the anthem.
We'll watch for that tonight, right, Lester, on the NBC Nightly News?
Yep.
Thank you.
I'll have it tonight.
Thanks for checking in with us. Always like talking to you.
All right, great talking to you both.
Coming up soon, we're going to be talking to a scientist about the amazing Mars discovery. Let's check in with Judy Pilak now, find out what's coming up bottom of the hour.
A three-year-old and her father shot on Chicago's South Side.
Traffic trouble spots. Here's Violetta Padromedic. All right, this is the Rokan Show of me, Anna DeVlantis. Richard Roper is here as Ro is on special assignment. He'll be checking in with us later on in the show.
And I want to remind people, Anna, that you can plan your home improvement and DIY projects Sunday mornings on WGN-TV. Watch House Smarts with the one, the only, Lou Manfredini at 10:30, followed by Weekend Workbench at 11.
Quickly, we have the Kennedy Center honors named and includes Hamilton. First time the center has honored a musical. Remember, Trump called them very overrated.
Yeah, sure, the Kennedy Center honorees, Reba McEntire, the great jazz saxophonist and composer Wayne Shorter, Philip Glass, always does that kind of really cool music, and Cher.
Nice.
Now, the question is, like last year, the honorees, they said they weren't going to have them to the White House because I think it was one of those, we're going to not invite you before you say you're not coming, because I don't think Lionel Richie was going to show up.
That's kind of how it went down.
Norman Lear, the famous agitating television producer. I don't see the cast of Hamilton, the creative team. Lin-Manuel.
Pretty sure he won't attend.
Is it Lin or Manuel? What's your name?
He's overrated either way. Judy's News coming up in 2 minutes. Love that sound. We know what that means. This is the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Richard Roper is here. We've got Kevin here because we're talking to Nick Schmaltz in advance of the Blackhawks convention. We're all going to be out there broadcasting live. The Hilton Chicago, 720 South Michigan. Isn't that nice? It's 720 South.
See that? Perfect.
Michigan. See how they work that out for us? Beautiful. This Friday through Sunday, it's going to be a ton of fun. Nick, how are you? Looking forward to the convention?
Yeah, it's fun getting back together with I've been away for a while since the season. No guys like Jonathan, Patrick, and Corey that will be there, so it'll be fun to see them and with the rest of the teammates.
When's the last time you saw most of those guys, like Kane and others?
Nick. Nick.
I think Nick's got a bad
song. Didn't offend him.
Oh, no. Maybe we can get Nick back on.
Classic technical.
Let's bring him back.
We'll talk a little bit about the convention with our own cab ride.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because it's so much fun. We always say it's like you meet your favorite players. There's total access. The Blackhawks do it right. They make it interactive. They make it fun. Kids and adults, everybody, no matter what age you are, it's really a good time.
Yeah, I think, you know, Coach Quinville was on with Cochran this morning. I listened back to the whole thing, and he does have a different tone in his voice. I think they are very eager to get back at this whole thing. And you see they have this new Chicago Pro Hockey League. It's a summer league in Chicago here once a week, and it's NHL players, it's semi-pro guys, it's college kids. And tonight, Jonathan Toews is playing in this. So, you know, Alex DeBrincat's playing in it. All these guys, I think, are very eager to get back on the ice. They missed the postseason for the first time in a decade. So this is new territory.
The good news is you had a lot longer layoff. The bad news is you don't want that long of a layoff.
We don't want that again, do we?
Right.
Nick probably doesn't want that either. Hi, Nick. Thanks for calling us back. We had a bad line before.
Yeah, no problem.
Hey, Nick, we were just talking about that pro hockey league, the summer league. Have you participated in that at all? And even if you're not, what do you think that says about hockey, the state of it in Chicago, I guess? And really, how cool is it to see NHL players playing alongside kids who are in college or just out of high school?
Yeah, actually, I'm on my way right now to my first game. So heading down for that and then staying for the convention. But yeah, it's awesome to see. I mean, I know they were doing the same similar thing in Minnesota there, and they have a bunch of pro guys playing and kids and stuff coming out to watch and going to a good cause, a good charity. So that's awesome. And yeah, I think, I mean, if I was a college kid playing with guys like Toews and big names like that, I think it'd be pretty cool, especially in the summer. You can kind of learn to see what they do, pick up a few things, and try to translate it to their game. So yeah, it's awesome to see how much Chicago hockey has grown.
Well, Nick, you had a breakout year yourself last year, my friend. Pretty soon the young kids are going to be talking about playing with you. 21 goals, 31 assists.
But, seriously.
You know, going into the convention, and you know there's so much love here in Chicago, and the fans are very passionate, but it's a different off-season this year, Nick. For the first time in a decade, we don't have playoffs to talk about. And I got to feel like there's going to be a little bit of an edge to the coaches, the players, everybody, and a sense that you guys want to get back in the mix of things.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's not fun when you're playing those last 10 whatever games and they're meaningless. Usually you want to be getting ready for the playoffs. So, I think that's our goal every year is just, obviously you want to be a high seed, but at like you saw this year. It doesn't really matter, or any other year. It doesn't matter what seed you are. Just the goal is to get in, and then anything can happen. So that's going to be our goal and our mindset from opening day at training camp. And, you know, we're going to do everything in our power to put us in a good situation.
Yeah, you heard Blackhawks president John McDonough say that making the playoffs is the top priority. He's made that in no uncertain terms. He's like, fans are very hungry for it. You know, the organization's hungry for it. Players have got to be very hungry for it. I mean, you guys have achieved so much. I mean, the recent history and the long history of the Blackhawks, and this has got to be something that the players are very hungry for.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, the regular season's it's long, and, you know, you just want to get as many points as you can, whether it's a tie or any points help at any point in the season. So, you know, they add up at the end of the year, so we got to take it game by game. And then, you know, everyone wants to play in the playoffs because that's when it's the most fun. You know, that's when teams really come together and, you know, you can really do something special. So we just want to get to that point and then go from there.
Nick, you've had the chance here now for the past season plus to play alongside some legends, Blackhawks legends, NHL hockey legends, Hall of Famers, Jonathan Toews, Keith, Seabrook, Kane. What have you taken away from playing along those guys and seeing how they go about their business? And was there a message from any of those guys after you guys did miss the playoffs about what needs to be done this offseason?
Yeah, I mean, it's an honor to play with those guys. They're not only great players, but they're great leaders and great people to be around. They're very humble, even though everything they've accomplished, they act just like everyone else. So it's pretty cool to see that. And how hungry they are for more every day. They want to get better, even though they're definitely at the top tier of the hockey world. So that's awesome to see. And wasn't a huge message. I think everyone kind of knows what to expect coming to training camp. It's going to be competitive. Everyone's going to have a new mindset, fresh start, and we're trying to put this past season behind us and, you know, start fresh and hopefully to get off to a good start and just take off from there.
We heard Brian Bickell will be at the Blackhawks convention this year, retired, but a favorite, for sure, a fan favorite. He was very good to this town and obviously dealing with his own health issues. Also, Hall of Famer Chris Chelios is going to be introduced as the official ambassador to the Hawks, joining legends like Tony Esposito, Dennis Savard, so many others. Going to be an exciting time there. I guess I want to tell you that, you know, my nephew came to the Blackhawks convention last year for the first time. He got a jersey signed by Jonathan Toews, and it literally has changed his life. He's brought that everywhere. He has it on his wall. He thinks I'm the coolest aunt. And I just want to thank you and the players, the organization, for the way you treat the fans and the experience you create, because there's so many kids and adults who walk away from that and just feeling like over the moon. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's especially cool to see those kids. You know, we were all at that point sometime in our lives where we were looking up to guys and, you know, an autograph or whatever, you know, means the world to those kids. So it's cool for us to be able to give back to them and, you know, see how happy they are. And, you know, hopefully we can continue to do that. And, you know, hopefully many more kids and everyone, all the fans can make it out this year, because I think it'll be a great time.
Nick, are you a personal goal setter? Do you have points in mind, goals in mind, assists in mind? Because as Rich said, you did have a breakout year last year. What do you want to do on the ice this year? What are some goals you're setting for yourself for the upcoming season?
I think I'm just trying to get better. I mean, I think if I play my game, I think just being a little bit more consistent every game, playing to the best of my ability. And it's a long season, so you got to be mentally tough, and there's a lot of travel, so you got to be prepared for every game. And I think as I play more and more, I think I'll get better at that. And then if I can play my game like I know I can every night, I think, you know, the goals and assists, that stuff will take care of itself. So not trying to focus too much on numbers, just my play and what I can do to help the team win.
Awesome. Keep doing what you're doing, Nick, and we appreciate you checking in. We'll see you at the Blackhawks convention this weekend, this Friday through Sunday, at the Hilton Chicago. Thank you, Nick.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, man. And by the way, anybody, if anybody has an itch to watch some hockey right now, that summer league's pretty cool. It's every Wednesday, and it runs for the next month or so. But they play tonight at 6 o'clock. Jonathan Toews will play, and then they have a second game around 8 o'clock at the new – you could check out the new NBA Arena where the Hawks practice. I think it's like $5 to get in. So
great way to see and get up close and see these great players. And, hey, listen, what the heck? Why don't we do it right now? Be caller number 8 in honor of Nick Schmaltz at 312-981-7200. That way you can win a family four-pack of passes to the 11th Annual Blackhawks Convention. It is at the Hilton Chicago, the 27th through the 29th, courtesy of Mathnasium, changing lives through math. Get convention passes at chicagoblackhawks.com.
Good luck. Coming up, more on an amazing Mars discovery, but let's check in with Judy Pilak, see what's coming up top of the hour in the news.
Part two of our series, America's New Soldiers.
Time to check traffic trouble spots. Here's Violetta Podramatic. This is the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantes. Richard Roper is here, and we have an amazing guest here because there has been an amazing discovery on Mars, and we want to learn all about it. Michelle Nichols, Director of Public Observing at the Adler Planetarium, is with us. And Michelle, we're happy you're here because we need someone to explain this. I'm seeing all the headlines about what a game changer this could be, what a breaking moment in science it is, and it sounds pretty exciting, but what have we actually learned?
Right. So we need to temper the enthusiasm just a little bit. But what has happened is the European Space Agency's Mars Express spacecraft has a radar instrument on it. That radar instrument has been studying, among other things, the south polar cap of Mars, so the south ice cap. And it has they've determined from some of the radar reflections that they've gotten back that there may be a 12-mile-wide liquid water lake underneath the south polar cap.
Wow.
Now it's pretty cool if this could be completely confirmed. Now it's not 100% certain that it's there. NASA, a scientist from NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab, was at least willing to use the words certainly plausible. So Mythbusters fans know the word plausible is pretty good. And it seems a better than 50-50 chance that it's actually there. There could be some other things going on, but the science team is at least confident enough in their data that they were willing to release this information in their paper.
I saw one of the quotes from one of the lead scientists who reviewed this data. He said, "I can't absolutely prove it's water, but I can't think of anything else that it looks like at this time other than liquid water." And he made that differentiation between liquid water and more of a solid. Why is that important?
Because all life that we know of needs liquid water to survive. Every single life form on Earth, it may only need a little bit, may need a lot, but we all need liquid water. And if we're going to search for life on other worlds, we're going to go where the water is. And so when we look for liquid water elsewhere in our solar system, and we found it elsewhere in the solar system, these are the places that we go, all right, once we want to go back here and we want to study these areas further. And he's right. There's the only way we're going to know for absolute certain that thing is there is to drill down in the ice and find it. But the problem is that spacecraft has not been designed or built yet. So it may be a little while before we can be absolutely sure.
And when we talk about a body of water, Michelle, that's the difference between like some melted ice type of situation. That's when they're talking about a body of water. Can you imagine what that bottled water would go for from the Mars lab?
You've seen the price of Fiji, pricey, haven't you? Oh my gosh.
But that's,
oh my goodness. I mean, 12 miles wide, that's a pretty decent sized body of water. Now, it could be not terribly deep. They're saying that it could be at least 3 feet deep. It has to be at least 3 feet deep in order for that radar instrument to detect it at all.
Okay.
It could be very, very wet soil mixed in with rocks, stones, that sort of thing. So that could be an interpretation. But until we can totally drill down in there and sample it directly, the best that you'll probably hear most of the scientists say is plausible.
Could that happen? Would that happen? When would we see something like that?
Usually designing and building NASA spacecraft takes on the order of maybe 10 years. Mm-hmm. So I would not be surprised if we're talking like latter 2020s, maybe. There could be some fast tracking that they might want to do, but they've already got spacecraft in the pipeline. So in order to put something in the pipeline, you got to potentially move something out of the pipeline. So that's why, and you want to make sure that you're sending something safely and it's going to work. You don't just want to rush it just because you want to get some science back. But I'm guessing 7 to 10 years to before we might see this, yeah.
And if it's a Chicago firm with the construction, then it's going to be 12 to 14 years.
Over budget, and then there'll be a scandal at the end of the whole thing.
We're a little behind there. Got to get some payments.
Yeah, seeing where the funding...
But wouldn't it be awesome to see a Chicago flag on Mars? That would be pretty cool.
Yes, it would. It would definitely be. I was also saying that they'd like scientists were looking at subglacial lakes here on our planet and trying to compare them to what they were seeing on Mars, and that was helpful in coming about their determination.
Absolutely. So there are under the glacier lakes in Antarctica and Greenland. So seeing that data on Earth and comparing that directly to what they see is absolutely critical. And so that's where studying Earth tells us about Mars. And where studying Mars could tell us about Earth because, hey, if this could be liquid water, it could be a friendly place maybe for life to be on Mars. What could that life be like? Probably bacteria. I mean, but I'm going like 15 steps into the future. We got to make sure that water's there in the first place.
Got to get there first. You know, I have that Stargazer app on my phone. I don't know if you have it on Richard. Like you can download it, look at the sky, and it just shows you all the stars, the constellations, the planets that are visible. And right now, Mars is making a pretty close appearance in terms of at this moment you can see quite a bit. Talk about viewing Mars, and I understand there's a day coming up that might be one of the best days to view the planet.
Yep. So if anyone's noticed that extraordinarily bright orange thing in the sky that's in the middle evening time period, that is Mars. Mars and Earth every 26 months are closer to each other, and Mars is going to be closest to Earth in the last 15 years on Monday night into Tuesday morning. So we're going to have an event here at the Adler, free event, Monday night, going to have telescopes out. Just show up, put your eyeball up to one of our telescopes, and you will be able to see Mars. And it's probably one of the planets that a lot of people haven't seen through a telescope because it usually isn't that interesting for a telescope. It's usually just small and dim and boring. So weather permitting, we'll be here Monday night, 9 to 11 p.m. Cool. So come on down and hope to see you. And you can even touch a piece of Mars that we'll have here as well.
How about that? Always love visiting the Adler. And we thank you so much for the expertise you lend to the show and checking in with us regularly whenever we hear about these discoveries. Michelle Nichols of the Adler Planetarium, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much. Hope to talk to you soon.
All right, we've got Judy's News in 2 minutes.
Hey, check this out. Olympic gold medalist Kendall Coyne joins the Steve Cochran Show tomorrow at 7:40 a.m. to talk about the Blackhawks convention and give us an update about her wedding. How about that?
Like that. Okay. This is the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVellantis. Richard Roper here with us. And it is that special time of day. Time of day we look forward to every day for a variety of reasons. But one of them is because this is the time when we have the...
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
I'm pressing the button,
Let's go.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
3, 2, 1.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVellantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
I'm trying.
I could have done all that.
Yeah, you were doing a good job with that, Richard. You got a good voice on you. You could sing that next time.
I could record different versions of it, too. Like an operatic version.
Oh,
or
yeah.
Like
how would you do that? How would that sound?
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
We should have different versions.
Go.
I like that, right?
Yeah. You got one, Kevin? You got a version?
I don't want to embarrass myself.
No.
I'll leave it. Richard's got the pipes, yeah.
He's got it figured out.
But can you do the Orion Samuelson number counting?
Oh.
Number three.
Violetta, you got one of those?
No.
Okay. Violetta, no, it's on the opposite end of the spectrum from Orion. No, it's like Orion and then Violetta.
I wouldn't want to try to do Orion either because he's got the best set of pipes in the business. So let's start it out with...
Number five.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. He's been getting grilled this afternoon. Started right about the time we started on this show. He's defending the Trump administration's foreign policy across the board on Capitol Hill today and facing some fierce questioning from both Republican and Democratic senators about North Korea, about Russia, about Iran, and much more. Here is one particularly testy exchange between Pompeo and Senator Bob Menendez, New Jersey.
Has the president told you what he and President Putin discussed in their two-hour closed-door meeting in Helsinki?
The presidents have a prerogative to choose who's in meetings or not. I'm confident you've had private one-on-one meetings in your life as well. You've chosen that setting as the most efficient way to...
I just asked you a simple question. Did you, Secretary. Did he tell you whether or not what happened in those 2 hours?
Yes, Senator, the predicate of your question implied some notion that there was something improper about having a one-on-one meeting. I completely disagree with
just,
the premise of your question.
I didn't ask you a predicate. I asked you a simple question. I hope we're going to get through it.
Yeah, searching for details, it wasn't particularly easy today. At one point, Senator Bob Corker asked, you know, I can't say it more forcefully, we need clear details about what happened in those behind-the-closed-doors meetings with two leaders who are definitely not America's friends. You got Putin and Kim Jong-un, one-on-one meetings. What happened? Try to describe what happened. Denuclearization, what are the steps? Have we outlined any? You know, what's happening next? And you know, he did a good job at defending the president's positions, but there weren't a lot of details just yet, and he's still being grilled at this moment.
You know, that's a classic example there. The answer he gave was to a question that was not asked. So it was like, well, classic. Were you briefed on what happened? You know, the very idea that you say the two leaders cannot get together, and it's like, what?
Let's back up there to the part
where
you didn't ask.
I didn't say that. And then you get something where you talk all over each other.
Well, we have more here of that kind of activity.
Did he tell you what transpired in the two-hour meeting?
I've had a number of conversations with President Trump about what transpired in the meeting. I was also present when he and President Putin both gave us a sense of what they discussed in the meeting that followed immediately after.
Did you have
also had the chance to speak with Sergey Lavrov twice about the Russian view on what takes place? I think I have a pretty complete understanding
of what took place. Did you speak to the translator who was at that meeting?
No, I haven't.
Have you seen any of her notes?
Senator, I have never been in lots of meetings. I've had lots of note takers and lots of translators. I've never relied on the work that they did.
Did the
for
president
me to understand
discuss,
what took place in that meeting? And it does not need to be
did
done.
The president
here,
discuss,
and won't be.
I think more of an example there. I'm just trying to search. We got one more clip here.
Let's the hear question it. Is: when he had a chance, did he confront Putin and say, "We don't recognize your annexation of Crimea. We don't recognize your continuing hostilities in eastern Ukraine, and there's consequences for that"?
Senator, the president was very clear with Vladimir Putin about U.S. positions. They're the U.S. positions that are the Trump administration's positions, and he spoke about them very firmly and clearly when he met with Vladimir Putin.
And that, he told you that?
Senator, I'm telling you what he had a conversation with Vladimir Putin about, and I'm telling you what U.S. policy is today.
All right. That's as far as they've gotten. That was one of the testier exchanges, but again, still just grilling.
Can you believe you're asking me these questions?
I know, right? Such an inconvenience. Kind of have to know. There is some oversight in this world, in America, and that's a good thing. So we'll see what else comes out of those hearings as we come along. But let's move on to...
Number four.
Sean Spicer. We remember him. Ah. Spicy Spicerson. He joined the Steve Cochran Show this morning. He was on with Steve talking about his new book, The Briefing. Sean says that people just don't understand the stress that comes along with being in that kind of position that he was in.
I'm not looking for any sympathy, but I don't know that people fully appreciate, you know, how what kind of a toll it takes on you. And I was with a former kind of counterpart of mine from the other side of the aisle the other night, and she said to me, you know, I don't think people fully appreciate what it takes to stand up there. And neither of us were looking for sympathy. But, you know, I tell a story in the book. One day I come home and my house is up for sale on Zillow. You know, and no one, you can't get out there and complain about it. This is the job you signed up for. But, you know, someone had gone out and found a way to post my house up for sale.
Well, there's no way you could have known you were getting into that. I mean, you know.
No, I agree. But I think, and like I said, I'm not looking for sympathy in this, but I think that there's an element that you don't fully understand will occur in terms of the emotional impact and intensity that takes place.
Well, I think it's intensified when day after day and briefing after briefing you say things that aren't true because you have to defend your president. And you saw the stress on him. You certainly see it with Sarah Huckabee Sanders, mm-hmm. who looks like the most miserable human being in the world right now as she does her job, because they know, and he knew, that many times what he was saying was absolutely categorically untrue. And yeah, that takes a big strain on you.
Or the president would undermine exactly what you said,
yes.
after you said it, an hour later even, would put out a tweet
exactly.
to that effect. And so the stress of trying to understand the message to begin with, trying to understand what the president wants you to say, and then not lie out there. The BBC just did an interview with Sean Spicer that's gone viral because it was so tough on him in terms of the lies that came out of the administration and the way he handled them and went kind of point by point with them. And it was a very testy exchange. I mean, he just always did not look healthy when he was toward the end.
No, and I think he did underestimate that. And I think Spicy and other people who have worked for Trump have not understood fully themselves how this is a different ball game. It's never an easy job, but he found that out when he made a little award show appearance and then found himself shunned at parties. Mm-hmm. I think he thought everyone was going to say, oh, you know, that's just part of the game. I'm a spin doctor. But that's not the case. The other thing I think is, too, is like, look, he's everywhere and he's entitled to promote his book. I feel like this is one of those books that's going to sell a lot of copies for about 2 weeks, but no one's actually going to read the entire book. Do you mm-hmm. want to read an entire book by Sean Spicer?
Well, I can't imagine that he really reveals a lot, right? Because he still is kind to the president, and there were obviously moments there that we'd all want to know about what happened, but I'm not sure that there's going to be tremendous honesty about that. I don't get that sense.
I just thought an entire book, a pass.
And he apparently, the New York Post has this afternoon that his one of his promotional book stops was canceled due to the, quote, political climate. So that's the book tour, but I don't wish any harm on Sean Spicer, honestly. I know a lot of people do, but I don't. I think I had a tough job.
I do think, look, there are a lot of former spokesmen, former press secretaries who are out there in the private sector or doing political things. There are dozens of them still around going back, you know, many, many administrations. I think for Sean Spicer and now for Sarah Huckabee Sanders, it's a different ballgame.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what they do after this, it's going to follow them in a big way.
And Omarosa, meanwhile, has a seven-figure book deal. Oh. So that's there's justice in the world somehow. Does that make sense? I don't know. We're going to have more of your three, your two, and your one after the break. But first, we're going to check in with Judy Pilak. Find out what's coming up bottom of the hour here on WGN.
A Wheeling man charged in a crash that killed a Hersey High School girl.
Violetta Podramatic has your traffic trouble spots.
Chicago is hosting the ultimate month-long food festival this August. Visit ctfoodbowl.com to get your seat at the table.
All right, this is the Ro Khan Show with me, Anna DeBlantis. Richard Roper is here. We're going to check in with Ro at his secret location coming up. But we're in the middle of the top five of five, so checking in at
number three.
Mayoral candidate Willie Wilson, friend of the show, apparently did not violate. He's been here several times,
that's
Richard,
true,
and we
right?
really, you know, appreciate his visits. Did not violate election law by handing out more than $200,000 in cash and checks Sunday to people at an event he attended with Governor Bruce Rauner. It was a Southside church, and according to the state elections board, I don't know if this surprised you, he went on Fox Chicago to explain why he handed out the money.
Well, I've been doing it for the last 25, 30 some years. We do this all of the time. But all this was my money, all right? The checks that we give away is my money. The governor gave $100,000, you know, we gave those checks away. Why are people worried about my money that I'm giving away? They should be worried about Ron Emanuel giving away their citizen taxpayer dollars. It's just crazy, all right? Now, unless there's a law that says that I cannot give away my own money that I worked hard for, I will continue to do so.
Yeah, and they ruled that it did not violate any campaign rules, according to the state. He can give away his own cash, as he has been doing, from his own foundation. Continue doing that.
What if that starts a trend? Because, like JB has a lot of money.
A lot of money.
So he could be out there like the Monopoly guy, just like, you know, making it rain over the entire state. Hi, I'm JB Pritzker. There has been a drought in Illinois, but not when it comes to me. I'm going to make it rain.
Now vote for me. You can't say. That's the only thing you can't link it to, potentially. I don't know. I thought that was particularly interesting because Bruce Rauner was there at the church, had given money. Then that money was distributed in front of the church and tied to, I guess, like property taxes.
I'm going to the wrong churches. They always ask me for my money.
So it
with
works.
A basket, not the other way around.
We have another clip here pertaining to that.
Now, the governor say what he need to say. Yeah, look, anybody that give me money to the foundation, if they want it back, I'll write a check and give it back. Yeah, Lord bless me that I don't have that to worry about.
Okay.
All right. Good for him. But but Governor Rauner says he thought it was inappropriate to be doing something like that. So he's separating himself from that whole action.
Okay.
We have one more clip? Yeah, one more.
We should help the poor, all right? The rich are getting richer, all right? All the dollars that Ron Emanuel is getting in his campaign wall chest is from people that have bought the city from him. Mm. This is what you should really focus on. Don't bother me with my money that I work for, all right? Get on those guys, all right? So I said to all of them, look, stop criticizing me. Criticize these politicians. Make them get out and do what's right. We got to rewrite the laws. We got to lock up the politician who take money from the poor and give it to the rich.
He makes some good points about Mayor Ron Emanuel. And there is a certain charm to Willie Wilson. There really is.
Self-made man, incredible story.
Can he hand out some cheeseburgers? I'll take one of those.
Okay.
He's got a McDonald's.
That's right. That's where he made his fortune. Started out there and moved on to other things. All right, Willie, you keep helping people.
Maybe we'll get him in for the Knarple Wagon one week.
Wouldn't that be great?
With McDonald's. Why not?
He lives, actually, we've learned, not too far away. So we'll have him just stop over one day, kind of next door. All so right. Maybe we'll just ask him to stop by one day be part of it. Let's move on with this.
Number two.
Checking in at number two. One winning ticket. One, can you believe it? Sold for the whopping more than $500 million, $522 million dollar Mega Millions jackpot with one-time cash option of $308 million.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. The winning numbers drawn Tuesday night. Well, they already know who they are. 1, 2, 4, 19, and 29 with the Mega Ball number 20. You didn't have them. The ticket for the fifth largest jackpot in Mega Millions history.
Wow.
Well, it was purchased in California. That's how we know you didn't have them. At Ernie's Liquor, where a crowd of well-wishers gathered after the announcement. Owner Kawal Shachdev gave an interview, and he talked about how he learned his store sold the winning ticket.
One of my employees, he called me when I was home. And I was actually taking a nap, and when he called, I woke up, and then he said, congratulations. And I said, about what? And he goes, our store sold the winning lottery ticket. And I jumped from there and came right over here.
How about that?
See, and I love this. This is a Kawal Shachdev. His name of his liquor store is Ernie's. And for some reason, that is a popular liquor store. You know how there's Ray's? There's a million Ray's pizzas in New York. There's always a lot of Ernie's liquors. I don't know why, but kudos to Kawal. He said, you know what? I own not Kawal's liquors. He's went with Ernie.
Ernie's easier to pronounce.
I guess.
He gets a little piece, a little something-something from that jackpot.
Absolutely.
So he's happy for a number of reasons. And one more thing here. Chris Martinez was at the store and says he was going to buy a Mega Millions ticket, but didn't.
I should have bought the Mega, and I was going to, and I didn't. That could have been me. It could have been me.
Oh, that hurts.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Well, unless there's like video of the winner, like, you know, and Chris saying, go ahead of me and buy the ticket. You know, you weren't going to get that ticket, Chris. Don't feel like that couldn't have been you. It wasn't going to be you.
Or do we also know if it was someone chose those numbers or if it was, you know, the random?
Exactly.
So a lot of factors.
Don't beat
there,
yourself
my friend.
Up
it's
there,
not
Chris.
Just, you were close, but not that close. All right, checking in at
number one.
Speaker of the House Paul Ryan posted a video to Twitter last night strictly for a few laughs using the popular and widespread reading mean tweets out loud concept pioneered by Jimmy Kimmel.
Paul Ryan could be a live-action Disney villain. Hashtag widowspeak. They used to call me Eddie Munster, so it's not too much of a stretch. Paul Ryan is proof that you don't need a spine to do P90X. Woodchucks eating Paul Ryan's car has given me hope for the future. My car dealer as well. I want to high-five Paul Ryan's face with a shovel. Just hard enough to make him see birdies. Hate that smug look. Paul Ryan's the kind of guy who crashes your kegger, drinks all your beer, and then calls the cops to make his noise come.
That's a good one. I like that one.
Give him credit for the self-deprecation. All right, let's wrap this up.
The top five at five.
This is the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Richard Roper is here and checking in on the super secret celebrity hotline. Very special celebrity. Why, it's Rokan.
Yes, indeed.
We missed you, Ro.
And it is a top, thank you. This is a top secret mission that I am on. But it is, and well, I'm trying to pretend it's a top secret mission because I'm surrounded by a bunch of military folks. And I'm trying to act like I've got my... Richard turned me on to these sunglasses that Tom Cruise wore in that that movie last year about the guy, you know, who's flying back and forth to Columbia.
Aviators? Or they're different?
What was the name of that movie, Richard? You know, the little Tommy Cruise was in?
The American?
Last year's movie.
Yes.
American-made. American-made.
Yes, American-made. Yes, yes. So they, and those are really cool sunglasses. So I bought them just so I could like, and I'm wearing blue, and I just wanted to decide I was gonna like just sort of like get past all these guys and pretend that I'm one of them. I got my hair cut real short, and it's not working.
They're like, "Who's that guy?"
Right.
But it's got to be fun because you're at the Oshkosh. It's like an aviation
Experimental Air Association EAA Air Venture every year. It's the largest single fly-in of aircraft in the world.
Wow!
It goes on for about 10 days. The first day, there are 2,000 planes that land at this tiny little airport in central Wisconsin. It's really interesting how they do it. They set up, they've got one runway, and then they turn a taxiway into a runway, and they spray paint colors on it.
What?
The red, yellow, yes, yes.
Wow.
Red, yellow, and green, and you have to choose. And they tell you, and these guys are all landing next to each other in these little planes. It's for general aviation pilots, you know, guys who have their little, you know, the Cessnas or whatever. Those guys all come in and they land next to each other, and they have to line up. The air instruction is fly in, get behind somebody, and follow them in.
Wow!
And somehow it works. Somehow people survive this. I don't know exactly how. And then they've got all of these, like, for example, right now.
Wow. Good timing that you have to do that, Ro. Nicely done.
Thank you very much. That is a World War II era Army Air Corps plane that just flew overhead.
Cool.
It's a P-47 that just flew overhead. And they've got military. I was just talking to them. Hopefully we're going to be able to do this a little different way. Had a B-1 pilot, one of the first B-1 pilots, that's a big Air Force bomber, who flew into Afghanistan this year. So they have a... all right, hold on a second here.
Wow, there's a lot of planes flying there.
That is the P-51 Cadillac of the skies.
He's just in heaven.
He's geeking
right
out.
Now,
he's
he?
Totally. What's the coolest thing you've seen? Like, I mean, I'm sure.
Right there. They have a P-51 that's in reflective metal that is here. That is, they're going to do the Heritage flight right now where they have the P-47, the P-51, and an F-16. So you get all the different. The F-16 is a modern fighter jet, and so they have them fly in formation over the show. There's more military aircraft here than there vintage military aircraft here than there's probably in any other single place in the world right now. And all of this stuff flew in.
That's amazing.
This is all airworthy stuff. And the UPS just flew their big MD-11 in. And it's like it's sitting on the flight line, and you can get and the beauty of this is you get to get on all these airplanes. You get to walk through them. You get to, you know, they have the owners and the pilots and all that are here, and they explain, you know, everything works. And then for a fee, you can fly on some of them.
Incredible. Ooh. Well, you mentioned that P-51, Ro. That's like the classic, right? The classic bomber, single seat from World War II.
Yes. Pursuit. A little pursuit job, as they used to say. They can know those World War II movies. What do you do? I fly a pursuit job. You know,
right.
Like, okay. All right.
So cool.
And that was the one that's from, speaking of movies, that was a Steven Spielberg movie about the kid in the internment camp, where they couldn't wait for the P-51s to come in and free them from, and they were in right outside of Shanghai.
a very famous movie. I'm just going to do all these movies that I can't remember the names of. I know Richard can.
Well, I'm not really working for anybody. What's the name of the movie with the guy in it?
You know. Yeah, the sled movie, right? but why is it Oshkosh? It just seems like an unusual place to have that many planes, the most anywhere for this period of time. It's a small airport, and how do they become the center of the universe and the aviation world?
The Experimental Aircraft Association, which does, kit aircraft and experimental aircraft, mm-hmm. I think it just started here. Mm-hmm. And then it just got bigger and bigger and bigger every year.
That sounds crazy close. I mean, I don't know. How far are you?
It took off going right over my head right now.
Where are they allowing you to stand, Ro? Are you right next to the... I mean,
you're literally on the runway.
Wow. It's a lot of things.
And so what they're going to do, that's the F-16. They have the B-1 bomber. Looks like a fighter jet, but it's a bomber. That's going to take off later, and it's going to do what they call a tactical takeoff. Wait, hold on. I think it's going to go. That's going to do a tactical takeoff like they do in Afghanistan, where they take off and they go straight up and they spiral into the sky. That is incredibly loud.
So they've got the experimental aircraft, military aircraft. Are there designs for the future as well? Do they combine all kinds of things?
No, everything here, though, that's on the flight line has to fly in.
Mm.
This is all stuff that actually has to. So there's experimental stuff that is airworthy at this point, but there's not. The key to this is really kind of looking back and kind of taking you through the entire aviation experience of humanity here. They have all this stuff. There's only a couple things here that are actually. There are a few aircraft here that are the only, vintage before World War II and World War II aircraft where they're the only ones left. There's only one left that can...
Are these all planes flying in? Are they flying out?
No, this is the same F-16. Imagine how this sounds. It's the same F-16 that's flying over our head and doing a demonstration for the people along the runway here.
That is so cool, isn't it?
I just feel like some of these pilots were in the mess hall and they said, "Hey, you know the radio guy? Let's wait till he's actually calling into his own show and give him, like in Top Gun where they get buzz right by." I feel like that's what they're doing.
They're probably going to try to scare you at some point. Get closer and closer and closer.
That thing was just right, that little sound that it just made, it flew right over my head and just kept going. It's when it stops and lingers over me, and it's looking at me in that little device that they've got in the cockpit and deciding, should I fire this or not?
And who's all there? Is there large crowds there, bro?
Yeah, thousands of people. Thousands of people are here.
It sounds...
But it's different than the Chicago Air Show in the sense that it's spread across an entire airport. And the thing is, you get to see, instead of having the buildings in the way, you get to see, the Blue Angels were here a little earlier. You get to see them do all the stuff that they normally do, in a distance. Mm. Sometimes you see them disappear behind the buildings. You don't know what they're doing. But there's the other back half of the show, when they do airport shows, you get to see them kind of coming back together and then going apart. It's super, super, super,
super cool.
Cool.
And you get to board some of the aircraft and maybe even fly in some of them, it sounds like, if you...
Yeah, I'm going to do that. I'm going to come out tomorrow for video. There's one opportunity to fly with a World War II trainer. There's the F-16.
Make us proud out there, Ro.
Yeah, make us proud, Ro. We'll let you go because we know you're geeking out and having so much fun, and you'll tell us about it Friday because we've got White Sox baseball tomorrow, so we're all back Friday. Have fun out there.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye. We hope you're safe.
back home. Right, right to us.
No big deal. Right. Just a couple planes flying overhead.
Super cool. The Oshkosh Aviation, the center of the universe in the aviation world right now. Good place for Ro to be.
He's in heaven.
He is, totally. You can tell, can't you? He's just like, you see the smile on his face.
I gotta go get some autographs, you guys. I'll be back later.
Yeah. Can you sign this? Can you sign
it
this?
It is very cool, though.
It so is. It really is. So he'll tell us more about that, I'm sure, on Friday. Because, again, like I said, we have White Sox baseball tomorrow. But right now, we've got other things to move on to. And Judy's news, we're going to find out what's coming up at the top of the hour. Judy.
Fox News standing firmly with CNN. We'll tell you why.
Traffic trouble spots. It is time for that. Violetta Pajamedic.
Hey, he's a television legend, Emmy award-winning creator of Everybody Loves Raymond. His name is Phil Rosenthal. Not the Phil Rosenthal. We know a different Phil Rosenthal.
Not that
one. The Phil Rosenthal that created Everybody Loves Raymond. He joins the Steve Cochran Show tomorrow at 9, 10 a.m. to discuss how everyone needs to feed Phil. Very nice. Cool. Actually, the Phil Rosenthals are friends with each other.
Oh.
The Chicago Tribune TV writer and writes about a lot of media stuff.
That
and
works.
Phil Rosenthal that created Everybody Loves Raymond.
Oh, well, they got to be. There I mean, that go. Just makes sense.
They have to be.
They met at the Phil Club.
Yeah.
You're a Phil, too.
That was my dad talk. Joke. That was Miller. My dad joke for the day.
Thanks,
Kevin.
All right, yeah.
At the Violetta Club.
No. Okay. No, I'm going to try to get that together. All right, but we just heard from Ro. He's out happily at the air show in Oshkosh, just loving his life because he's such an air show buff and aviation and everything like that. So we're going to hear from him later. But Richard Roper is here, and you have an important movie to review.
A movie that Ro Khan has been asking about as well. Sure we'll be revisiting this a little bit on Friday.
Well, they had like an ad for this months ago. They were the
Mission Impossible Fallout. Exactly. They have. They've been running ads for this for a long time. The sixth movie in the Mission Impossible franchise. It's pretty amazing when you think about this, Anna. Tom Cruise, the first Mission Impossible movie was in 1996.
I was reading there was a floppy disk featured
amazing,
in it. And these are so
right?
futuristic yeah. in their technology.
And
you
here
think about
he is 20-some years later, 22 years later, Tom Cruise at 56.
Wow.
Still doing these amazing action stunts. Mission Impossible Fallout. Now, here's the thing. Mm-hmm. You don't really need to have seen the other five. They're all kind of self-contained, although there are a lot of references to the previous ones. What you need to know is basically Tom Cruise is Ethan Hunt. He's the super secret head of the Impossible Mission Force. He's always being sent on these missions, should you choose to accept them, of course, right? And you've got to take down some terrorist who wants to take over the world. They're always trying to take over the world. We got a clip here. It's very cool, though. Angela Bassett plays the head of the CIA. Ooh. Alec Baldwin is the head of the Impossible Mission Force. And, mm-hmm. of course, Tom Cruise is Ethan Hunt. And they're all talking about a mission that kind of went wrong and then a mission that's coming up.
What do you think you're doing, Erica?
It may be your mission, but this is the CIA's plane. It doesn't take off without my say-so.
We need reliable intelligence, and we need it now. This scenario is precisely why the IMF exists.
The IMF is Halloween, Alan. A bunch of grown men in rubber masks playing trick-or-treat.
Hmm.
And if he had held on to the plutonium in Berlin, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
And his team would be dead.
Yes, they would. That's the job.
Ooh, I like this Angela Bassett character.
Yeah, there's always great supporting characters in these movies as well. There's been a lot of talk. You know, Tom Cruise famously broke his ankle while filming his own stunts in London.
They sounded like a serious injury.
Yeah, they had to shut down production for 2 months on the movie. One of the things I love about this movie is that there's heavy use of what they call practical effects, which are real stuntmen and stunt drivers, including, you know, the actors as often as possible, as opposed to just all CGI. So it's almost 2.5 hours, but it moves along at a great pace, and it's closer, I think, to a James Bond movie than an Impossible Mission Impossible movie, because it's really mostly about the Ethan Hunt character. And Henry Cavill, who is Superman in the Justice League movies,
I love Henry
he
Cavill.
Plays a killing machine that sort of becomes an unlikely partner of Tom Cruise's. We mentioned Alec Baldwin, Angela Bassett. There's always a great supporting cast. And the writer-director of this movie is Christopher McQuarrie. He's a great storyteller. He won the Oscar for writing the screenplay for The Usual Suspects. So it's a cut above your typical action movie. That's why I'm giving it 3.5 stars.
Wow.
For Mission Impossible Fallout. And you really do need to see this on the largest screen possible so you can appreciate that really is often Tom Cruise on that motorcycle, Tom Cruise hanging out of the side of that helicopter, Tom Cruise jumping from building to building. A lot of it was shot in London, some of it in Paris. Then they're in New Zealand, Zurich, you name it. And you can see that this is an expensive movie, and you can see the money on the screen, which I love as well. Great-looking action movie, but also very smart, and at times very funny, and has some romance. It has everything.
How cool is that?
Yeah.
Where does this rank in the franchise, would you say, in terms of the six of them?
I think it's either the best or second. The fourth one was also really good. The first one, when you go back, Brian De Palma was really interesting and good, you know, veteran director, directed the first one. First one's a It gets kind of ridiculous. And you know, there was a mention there, Angela Bassett's character says, you know, this isn't Halloween, you guys are your rubber masks. Because they're always like taking their masks off and revealing that they're impersonating someone else. I think they've gotten more sophisticated, a little bit darker and richer in terms of the storytelling, which is so rare for a franchise, for the sixth one to be as good or better than the original one. That never happens. Nobody says, you know, Fast and Furious 27 was the best of the franchise.
You don't.
Police Academy 5, that's when they really hit their stride. But they really have done a great job with these movies. And Tom Cruise at 56 shows no signs of slowing down. He looks about the same as he did in 1996, which
How
is a little
cool
scary.
And he does his own stunts still, as many as he used to. How cool is that? All right, 3.5 stars for Mission Impossible. Very cool. Thank you, Richard.
You
and then
got it.
We are going to be playing News or Ruse after the break. Then we've got other more fun on the way, but we're going to check in with Judy, get her news in 2 minutes.
And now, the Rokan Show presents News or Ruse, a true game of true wit and skill. And now, here's your master of ceremonies, Rokan.
Thank you, Mr. Duffy. Rokan is at the Aviation Extravaganza in Oshkosh at the moment. He's back Friday, so Richard Roper and I are handling the duties today.
Boy, did we do a great job. Is he going to worry about that? But I'm telling you right now, Ro, probably his two favorite things, aviation and scotch. So he's missing out
right now. A very special news arose because we have here with us Mark Williams, who is the Abelauer Scotch Whiskey brand ambassador. And Mark, I just love your bio. It's like you're from Michigan, okay, Western Michigan University. Then you decided to move to Aspen for the skiing lifestyle. Then you started to work as a brand ambassador for single malt scotch whiskey. And that is like a pretty big dream, I think, for most people to be able to say that. Thanks for being on the show.
Absolutely.
We'll turn your mic up there.
That
Mark,
helps.
There you are.
Right,
we can hear you now. So it's pretty amazing. You brought some scotches in for us to taste briefly. We only have a little bit of time here. But I think one of the things that's interesting is just smelling them and tasting a little bit. There's such a great flavor profile and a variety between scotches, which many people don't realize.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we talk about scotch whiskey, and a lot of people are afraid to drink it when they just said it was 90 at O'Hare. And, like, it's too hot for that. But I'll have a bourbon. It's all whiskey.
Same.
You know, there's not an enormous difference. The recipe is different. It's made of a different grain. But otherwise, we actually use bourbon barrels to age a lot of our whiskey.
Interesting.
So a lot of those similar flavors play part.
So tell us what we've got here. Anything that's special? Anything?
So you've got a little lineup in front of you. You have Aberlour, our offering for the United States is a 12-year, 16-year, and 18-year.
Mm.
We have
Very
this
nice.
Cask strength, pronounced Abuna. If you read it, it's impossible to pronounce it. Because it's
I did see that on the notes. I'm like, I have no idea how to say that.
Abuna, like Hakuna Matata, Abuna.
There you go.
Abuna. And then we also have, just specifically for the Chicago market, we have one single barrel of whiskey that was aged 16 years, 9 months in one bourbon cask.
Mm.
It's this lovely straw color, just really light, but neat
Very
notes
nice.
Of tropical fruit, and it's not your typical scotch whiskey.
It's not what people, the average person, would think, Mark. You mentioned the color. It's almost like a light golden as opposed to that darker
that
color.
Cherry reddish
what
color.
Expect.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Can you talk
That's
a little
true.
Bit about what the changes in the taste? You'd mentioned the 10-year, the 12-year, the 16-year. How does it change from a 10-year, for example, to 16-year?
Right. And this is typical for most single malt houses. It's a different recipe, right? Mm. So we use both used bourbon barrels and used sherry, Oloroso sherry casks, to age our whiskey. Then we use different recipes to draw from those two barrels to make our different whiskeys. So our 12-year has more by volume that was aged in a bourbon cask.
Okay.
So you're going to get more of that flavor, that char flavor. The 16-year is a pretty equal split, really cool balance of flavors there. The 18-year, more from the sherry cask. So if you're one of those big, bold, like spicy, dried fruit kind of people, the 18-year is for you.
Okay.
And that's pretty typical. The age is, while it does play a part in it, it's really just the name of that specific whiskey.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Mark, where can we find Aberlour Scotch Whiskey? Where is it available in our area?
You can look at any of your retailers around town. It's widely sold through the area, especially anybody who's got a really nice whiskey selection. Mm-hmm. They'll definitely have it. restaurants in town. There's plenty of steakhouses, restaurant bars, cocktail bars. Mm-hmm. It's up the street at Drum Bar. We've got it at Prime and Provisions at RPM Steak.
I've had it at Prime and Provisions, actually. Yeah, with a friend who loves this, who knows this inside out,
nice.
He always insists on it.
This is one of those neat whiskeys where when you see it, when you know about it, you look for
it's
it.
Nice.
It's out there. You just have to know what you're looking for.
And it's spelled so everyone knows how to find it.
A-B-E-R-L-O-U-R.
And it's delish. There's such a variety. It's awesome. Mark, are you ready to play News or Ruse?
Now we're going to put you to work.
Yeah, now that we've had a few drinks,
and
now
I'm
we're
just going to continue to enjoy this. So I must tell you that it's got a beautiful, smooth, just lovely
taste. It does. It's really fantastic. Thank you for sharing it with us.
Absolutely.
All right, we have News or Ruse now. So is everybody ready to play? We've got Mark is playing with Judy. Mark, you there?
Yes, I am.
Mark's
excited
here.
To be here.
Judy's
we're excited
there.
You're there. Judy
There's
is
Judy.
The good one to be paired with. Martin, are you there? You're playing with Violetta.
Yes, I'm here.
Hello, you sound excited.
Martin's very
Absolutely.
Excited. All right, let's go, Martin. Ted, you're playing with Mark, our brand ambassador. Ted, are you there?
I am here.
Excellent. You guys ready to play?
I'm so confused already because there's a Mark playing with Judy.
I know.
But then we've got Mark here. Who's playing with Ted, and then there's a Martin with Violetta.
The most confusing.
One more shot, and you'll clear it all up.
You're with one of the Marks, okay?
I'm with a Mark, okay.
You're with a Mark.
But
Mark is also
Mark
with a Ted.
Here. Mark, the contestant.
Right, I'm with the winning Mark.
What could possibly go right over
it's
the
already
next
the most
segment.
Confusing game show of all time, but we'll see how this goes. Hey, here are the prizes, and everybody's a winner. So that's the great part. No matter what happens, you win. Pair of tickets, the 35th anniversary tour of Night Ranger, playing all their hits, plus Deep Cuts on Friday, August 17th. Silver Creek Event Center. Four Winds Casino, New Buffalo, one of my favorite places. Tickets on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. Four Winds Casino, your entertainment escape. And
motoring.
Oh, yeah. You could just hear it now. Never
What's
measure.
Thank
you,
Richard.
All right, a little easily center, level, and hang all your wall decorations really fast. Eliminate the need to use a measuring tape or calculate fractions. Better known, made in the USA. Get yours at nevermeasure.com. Runners up also get that, plus a 2-hour adult adventure package for two, Northwest Indiana Deep River Aerial Park. Climb through the treetop obstacles and soar through zip lines. How about that? Fun for adventurers ages 8 to 88. Book online at edgeadventureparks.com. All right, Mark and Judy, are you ready for your first headline?
Yep.
All right, let's go. Teen blasts armed robber in face with power washer. Thief makes clean getaway. play there.
That seems so stupid, doesn't it?
Yeah, but I have a feeling that's probably true.
All right.
Judy?
I always have to go with the contestant, Mark. You better be right.
Mark?
Oh,
you will not
lucky.
Bear the wrath of Judy on that particular
answer. All right,
answer.
Very well
Nicely
done. We're moving
done.
Right along here with
like
News
I
or Ruse. All right, this is for Martin and Violetta.
Not,
are you ready?
No Mark involved in this,
this
one.
This is a Martin
ready.
And Violetta. Yes. Here we go. Here's your headline. Court date set for Orlando teacher accused of streaking topless through Margaritaville restaurant.
I think that restaurant is already a topless bar, so I don't think she can get arrested for it.
I'm with you. Whatever you want to do.
Ruse.
Martin, way to be engaged. All Ruse. Right, we got it. You're going to Ruse?
Nicely done.
I like men like you that just listen.
Just listen. Do whatever she wants. It'll go great. Just watch. Just wait. Ted and Mark, here is your headline. Uber can't keep down accusations of vomit fraud against its drivers.
That's true.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
All Mark sounded pretty confident on that one. All right. Yeah, I mean, Ted did. You
Look
got
you guys.
It.
Look wow, very
nice
impressive
first
round one.
Well done,
you
Ted.
Each have 1 point. Ted and Mark, Ambassador Mark, to distinguish him between the other Mark who's playing with Judy. Are you ready? It's time for round two. Here we go. Mesa man stole ambulance to buy sandwich, avoiding walk home in the heat. Mesa man stole ambulance to buy a sandwich and avoid walking home in the heat.
Well, was that today? Because it's really hot there now.
It's been hot.
Yeah. What do you think, Mark?
I'm going to go with Ruse.
I think so, too.
Oh!
true story. Mesa police say a 37-year-old man was booked into jail after stealing an ambulance, and he said he had just been released from a hospital for a heat-related issue. Didn't want to walk home. Also wanted to get a Sammy.
Not the way to do things, okay?
So sorry!
That's what happens. This is the way things go. Martin and Violetta, here is your headline. Armed scarecrow, no match for police in marijuana bust, cops say.
Mm.
Armed scarecrow, no match.
Martin, what are you thinking?
I'm thinking what? okay, so what state? Does it have a state? Can you just repeat it one more time?
Sure, here it is. Armed scarecrow, no match for police in marijuana bust, cops say.
You want to say news?
Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, I said it.
Need an answer, please?
All right, let's do it.
Okay, we're going to go news.
You're going to go news. News is where you go. Okay. Well done.
Congratulations. Very well done. Also, Martin just got a glimpse of what it would be like to be in Violetta's life. First, he says, hey, what are you thinking? And then says, listen, you can go either way, but I'd go with my way. So congratulations on that.
And then listen to me, everything I say.
All right, we're moving on
to
Ted and Ambassador Mark. Mm-hmm. This one's for you guys. Guitarist reveals he saved a fan's life by spitting beer in their eye.
What's your thought there?
Sounds good to me.
What does that mean, Ted? News or ruse?
News.
News.
News? You guys going with news? Okay. Nicely
absolutely
done.
True. There's a metalcore band, of course, Every Time I Die. I love their work. Mm-hmm. Jordan Buckley revealed he inadvertently helped the fan discover they had a brain tumor because he spat beer in her eye.
Wow.
And then they had to get a checkup for the eye, and they said, you know what? You got a tumor.
Wow. That's how that went down. Okay. Wow. Very, interesting ending. Okay, we are going to take a break here, but let's talk about what everybody has.
So far,
can I get judges? Can I get the totals for everybody, please?
1-2-2.
Mark and Judy have one, right?
1-2-2.
Violetta has two, and Ted and Mark, Ambassador Mark, have two.
Yes.
We're going to come back with the next round of News or Ruse, so stay tuned. But let's check in with Judy Pilek, see what's coming up bottom of the hour in the WGN News.
A police officer shot in Milwaukee.
And the traffic sponsored by the Illinois Department of Transportation. Here's Violetta Podramatic. All right, this is the Rokan Show with
me. Got to tell you something really fast here, too, Anna. Head off the beaten path to a secluded region brimming with natural beauty. Cruise in Indiana, Thursday on WGN-TV News at 9.
Very nice. We're going to give two news a ruse, but we do have Mark Williams, Ambassador Mark Williams, Abelauer Scotch Whiskey.
Yes.
And we've just been going through the tastings here, Mark.
So good.
Oh, my gosh. To die for.
I feel like Don Draper at this
don't
point
you?
From Mad Men.
And he even brought the fancy cut crystal glasses for us to sip them out of.
Well, that seemed appropriate.
Yeah, it totally is.
Beautiful,
I mean,
and
my gosh.
Smooth and just a great taste.
Mm, so good. Thank you for being here, Mark. Now let's talk about where everybody sits at this moment in this game of News or Ruse. We've got Martin and Violetta with 2 points, Ted and Ambassador Mark with two, Mark and Judy trailing with one. Here is a chance for you guys. It is the Orion Samuelson round three for first one for Mark and Judy.
Russian lawmaker demands parking spot for his horse.
What do you think, guys? Russian lawmaker demands parking spot for his horse.
What do you think, Judy?
I think it's a ruse, but obviously we're not very good at this game anymore.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I'm
trying
to go with
opposite,
I'm
going to
go with news. Let's try that.
All right. Mark, you're going with news, right? News.
Ooh,
nice.
Congratulations. You're right back in it.
Way to reverse.
I meant to say I'm not very good at this game anymore.
All right.
You're a Hall of Famer, Judy.
All right. We've got Martin and Violetta here in the Orion Samuelson round. Here you guys go. Here's your headline.
Oldest known case of dandruff found in 125 million-year-old dinosaurs?
I'd like to say on behalf of Larry King that that's not very nice.
Oh.
Because he's a dinosaur.
I very good feel about it. Thank you.
She's explaining it for everyone. Didn't get it? Now you guys have to decide. Is it news or ruse, Martin and Violetta?
Because he's old. Okay, what do you think, Martin? I can't hear you.
Martin? We can't hear you.
I can hear you a little
Martin,
bit.
The phone's upside down. That's the wrong side.
Speaking into the wrong end of the phone, Martin, I think.
I just don't think, because dinosaur skin is not preserved, it's just the fossil. I don't think that you can find that out.
You guys doing ruse, okay? Mm-hmm. I think I heard Martin say ruse, yeah. Violetta saying ruse, and ruse is totally completely wrong. All right,
I enjoyed Martin as Charlie Brown's parents.
That's how I hear everyone. Ted,
that's true.
That's how it works. Ted and Ambassador Mark, here is your headline from the Orion Samuelson round.
Train stopped by police when bagels flung in carriage.
Ambassador Mark and Ted, do you have what you're going to guess
here? We read that again.
Train stopped.
Really.
Okay, here it is. Train stopped by police when bagels flung in carriage.
That sounds like news.
It's got to be news. It doesn't make sense.
Oh, boy. The fake news world. All right, guys. And you are absolutely 100%
very well done.
For the win.
Yeah. That's
you
it.
You got it.
Nicely done.
Ambassador Mark and Ted, you are the winners. Let me remind you what you get here. A pair of tickets to the 35th anniversary tour, Night Ranger playing all their hits, plus Deep Cuts. All right. Friday, August 17th.
Can I say something?
Yeah, go ahead.
This is the fifth time I've played News or Ruse, and I won every single time.
How is that possible? You're better than Judy. We found someone. Well, you're going to win again today, Mark. Silver Creek Event Center, Four Winds Casino, New Buffalo. Tickets on sale now. Ticketmaster.com, Four Winds Casino, your entertainment escape. You'll get the Never Measure, Easily Center, Level, Hang Your Wall Decorations Fast, Eliminate the Need to Use a Measuring Tape or Calculate Fractions, Veteran-Owned, Made in the U.S. Get yours, NeverMeasure.com. Our runners-up get that two-hour adult adventure package. For two at Northwest Indiana Deep River Aerial Park. Climb through the treetop obstacles. Soar through zip lines. Fun for adventurers ages 8 to 88. Book online edgeadventureparks.com. Sing it, Richard.
Congratulations, Ted. Well done.
Nicely done, Mark. He brings the beautiful scotch and wins News or Ruse.
How about that? That was smooth, Mark.
Just winning on Wednesdays.
Look at you.
That's what we're here for.
You got it. So, Mark, give us one more plug for the Abelauer Scotch Whiskey, why everyone needs to try your brand. And it is so tasty. I have to thank you for what you brought by today.
It's one of those whiskeys that will surprise you. If you're not familiar with Scotch Whiskey, try this. It's light. It's sweet. There's no peat or smoke flavor to it. Mm-hmm. It's just
smooth,
friendly, and
it
easy
really
to drink.
It is. And thank you for sharing it with us. We appreciate it. Mark
thank
Williams,
you.
Abelauer
Mark.
Scotch Whiskey. Thank you for doing that. We've got News or Ruse. Or sorry, News, not Ruse. The News.
All real news.
It's all real. We
real
swear.
News.
It's Judy's news, and we know she'll kill us if we say otherwise. Yeah. So 2 minutes from now, we'll hear from Judy and her news. Sing it, Richard. Yeah.
Better believe it, baby. Also, check out the movie Boogie Nights, best use of that song
ever. Forgot
about and my favorite band of all time is Bobby Night Ranger, where everybody dresses like Bobby Knight, but also sings Night Ranger covers.
Perfect.
Parks and Rec. So
this is the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeBlanzis. Richard Roper is here, and Richard gave Mission Impossible the sixth. It's Fallout, the sixth installment in the franchise. 3.5 stars earlier.
That is correct.
Huge,
Anna,
for a sixth one in the franchise.
Yes, fantastic.
And you had a very important. You had a very interesting interview with Henry Cavill.
Got a chance to talk to Henry Cavill, who is the second lead in Mission Impossible Fallout. He plays this killing machine for the CIA. Who is tasked with accompanying Tom Cruise's Ethan Hunt on his mission. People also know Henry Cavill because he plays Superman in all the Justice League movies. And you might be surprised to find out he's actually British because he does such a great American accent as Clark Kent Superman, who, of course, is not originally from America, but you know what I'm talking about. He plays an American, as does the CIA agent. So people might have seen this recently on the internet. There's this whole meme where in the movie Mission Impossible Fallout, the Henry Cavill character does a reload of his arms. He like reloads his arms in a fist fight. It's the coolest thing you've ever seen. And it's like sweeping the internet. So I actually asked him where that came from.
Reloading your arms has become a thing because you literally reload your arms in the bathroom sequence. Where did that come from?
That was just a spur of the moment thing. It was my character was so frustrated with this kind of delicate tiptoeing around approach to the mission that he just wanted to get it done. And that's him saying, right, the gloves are off. I'm warming up my pain machine, and I'm about to, like, give it to this guy. And unfortunately, it doesn't really go his way. But it's a thought that counts, right?
It absolutely does.
It looks so threatening when he does it.
Yeah.
He loads his arms, kind of like, yeah, I'm ready for you.
And one of the things I love about this Mission Impossible movie, it kind of reminds me of the Bourne movies, where there's a lot of hand-to-hand combat with two or three, maybe four fighters. And yes, occasionally they have to pull to a long shot and it's going to be some stunt double. But most of the time, you can tell it's Henry Cavill. It's Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
It's the other characters. Now, here's another.
And that's an actor's choice. They could say they want to do that. Or they could say, yeah, I want a body double.
Well,
I want to do
it. It's interesting, too, because he actually said that this was by far the most physical role he's ever done. And I'm like, but you've played Superman. Yeah. And he was like, yeah, but that's almost all CGI and green screen. And he didn't do as many stunts. Other interesting thing about Henry Cavill is about 10 years ago when they were looking for the new James Bond, it came down to him and Daniel Craig. And they went with Daniel Craig. Now, it's cut to 2018 and there's been a lot of talk about Henry Cavill perhaps now being the new James Bond. Daniel Craig's going to do at least one more.
He's committed.
But I did ask him about that. Would he be interested in revisiting the chance to play James Bond?
I would be very excited to explore that option if it were to come around again and I were to have an opportunity to sit down with Mike Wilson and Barbara Broccoli. Then I would relish that opportunity.
Ooh.
Pretty cool. And those are the producers that own the rights to the Bond movies. He mentioned Mike Wilson and Barbara Broccoli. So I think he's going to become the next James Bond. I think he'd be perfectly cast James Bond.
So when is the next one coming out? Do we know? Is it
next year,
roughly?
Daniel Craig is the first to say, like, you know, he's 50-ish, and at some point, you know, you're just too old to play. James Bond is supposed to be, like, in his 30s, you know, at the top of his game.
Although Sean Connery played well into his...
Sean Connery just looked like he was 50.
Did he?
You know, when he was 20, he looked like he was 50. Now that he's 80, he looks like he's 50. But I think Henry Cavill would be an excellent choice
to play. Yeah, no question. He's so good in everything.
And he really adds a lot to the new Mission Impossible movie, because you need someone like that to play off of Tom Cruise. You have to have your own star presence. You know, if not, you're going to get blown off the screen by Tom Cruise.
Plus, he's legitimately British, which many people didn't know.
Apparently
so even
good
more
looking,
fitting.
Some of the ladies tell me.
Very much so. Even with that crazy mustache he wore for the really bushy one.
And turns out he's a Brit. Who knew?
And he's a Brit, so it all works. All right, we're going to take a break here, because on the other side of this, we've been puzzled about Richard Roper and his very cavallari reviews, which are getting a ton of hits online. Everyone wants to read them, and I'm like, why is Richard Roper doing this?
We're going from very Cavill to very Cavallari. How about that?
How about that? All right, let's check in with Judy Pilexi. What's coming up? We have Andrea. I'm sorry, Andrea Darlis.
Wait, I'm going to ask Judy what I'm going to tease. Hold on.
See if she can tell you. She's mad because she lost News or Ruse. So watch out. Yeah. She might bite you.
That's what she said to me. She's like, did you see News or Ruse? Fox is coming to CNN's defense, Anna.
All right. I saw that happen. The CNN reporter kicked out of the White House event, and then Fox said, hey, I'm here. Okay, so we're going to have
the
that.
Real News or Ruse winner.
The real News or Ruse. That's right. That's right, Andrea. You've won at this News or Ruse. And in fact, the last time you played, you were a winner. Tell Judy that, okay? See what happens. We'll get back to you later.
I feel like I'm in the middle of this here.
Don't worry. It'll all be fine. Judy will be,
Thanks, Anna.
Very kind. Let's check in with Violetta Pondrometic, see what's happening with traffic trouble spots.
Check this out. You can get out your old junk. The Steve Cochran Show plays Swap Me tomorrow when? 9:10 a.m.
Very cool. The Rocon Show with Anna DeBlantis. Richard Roper is here. Gave 3.5 stars of Mission Impossible Fallout. And that was a very cool interview with Henry Cavill. He's one of my favorites. And he might be Bond one day, we just learned as well.
That's right.
But you also do something else on the side that many people are very puzzled by, Richard Roper. We read you. We love you. I follow you religiously. I don't really even see a movie without hearing what you have to say first. And then all of a sudden, you start following this this very cavallari reality show.
I don't know if I've ever done like episode recaps of a show, at least not since maybe Breaking Bad or The Sopranos or something like that.
Right.
But I find myself drawn to Very Cavallari, which airs every Sunday night on E. And then every Monday, if you pick up the Sun Times or you go to the Sun Times website, you can see my recap. I not really just an episode recap, kind of a review, because Jay Cutler is just fascinating on that show, Anna. Even though he's
it's like, him, he's the star.
Yes, he's the breakout star. Like when Happy Days first came on the air, it was supposed to be about Richie Cunningham and Potsy and Ralph Melf, but then it became about the Fonz.
Yeah, it was.
And Jay Cutler is the Fonz of Very Cavalier.
So I've only listened to the show based on the clips that we've played here, you know, during like the top five. Mm-hmm. And I finally watched an episode last weekend, mm-hmm. and I ended up watching, because my TV kept giving the next one, I ended up watching like three in a row, and now I'm kind of obsessed.
I know, it's weirdly addictive, and there's something about, so folks who don't know this, you know, Jay Cutler, obviously, you know, Bears, Dolphins, Broncos, but most of his career with the Bears, mm-hmm. quarterback, married Kristen Cavallari from the Hills in Laguna Beach. Right. They have three kids. They moved to Nashville. Jay always wanted to live in Nashville ever since he played college ball at Vanderbilt. Right. And the show is all about her efforts to launch her new design and jewelry and home goods store, Uncommon James. But you keep getting the home scenes with Jay, who apparently never leaves the house other than to drive around once in a while and wears camo. Or backwards baseball caps, or
he's wearing
hunting
some
gear.
Kind of hipster country outfit with like a wool vest,
yes,
in the picture.
And then
he
puts
in your
on a cowboy
article?
Hat for one of these things because they want to go look at a new house because he wants to have goats and chickens. And he is the happiest mediocre retired quarterback in the history of the NFL. Oh. If he's bothered by the fact that like he had like almost only a couple of playoff wins, never won the big one. If he's bothered by the uh-huh. fact that he never lived up to his potential, you would never know it.
He's How do you know he's life. Happy though? I thought he was the most apathetic person ever. He doesn't smile.
He wanders around the house. In fact, in episode three, it's almost like he's Bruce Willis in The Sixth Sense because the only one who sees him is K-Cav. We actually have a little clip from episode three right here.
Terrific.
What do you think of the house? What do you think we should do?
Been ready.
I mean, the more I think about it, the more I like the idea of it. If this is our forever home, then I'm in.
Mm.
But I'm not going to move here. And then in 5 years, you'd be like, oh, no, you know what? I found this other house.
Mm.
I'm not moving again. Like, this is it.
No, I'm not going to move again.
What's happening? They're selling the one Nashville home for $8 million.
Right.
And now they're looking for another one that's real close?
It's a home in the country. So she'll have to drive 45 minutes into work every day. And he doesn't care because he's not going anywhere. So he just goes, well, you can listen to music and like call your friends. He couldn't care
very
less
sensitive.
About anything. And like when she's ready to go out to a party for one of her coworkers, it's his housewarming party. She's mm-hmm. like, do you want to come with? And he's like, are you kidding me? I wouldn't go to that party. And then she like says to the camera, I'm so glad he's not coming. Now I can take my girlfriend. He's like, it's so fantastic because he's exactly like, at least on this show, he's exactly like you'd think he'd be like. Like, mm-hmm. just don't care, Jay.
Yes.
Day in and
we
day
We know that,
out.
Jay.
And there's something fantastically
why is that entertaining, though?
Weird
just
about
a guy who's like a dud who walks around and does nothing
That's
and doesn't
so
react to anything.
That's what's so great about it.
And he doesn't seem to care about anything other than this house, apparently.
I know, but they're kind of cute together. Like, at first, I thought they were super annoying, and I thought she was just obnoxious. But they're not. Somehow, they make it work. Like, I like that they have such laid-back personalities and still just live together, even though it looks like they're very disinterested in each other. That's what it does.
Somehow
look like.
Working. Well, listen, they got and they got three kids, and to their credit, they're not putting the children on camera for this show.
So how do they work around that?
They just don't. They never show any of the scenes.
They don't do, like, the blurred faces or the back of them running down
the... It's not the Tom Brady thing where you don't see the kids at all. You do not see the children at all.
They're, like, always at school.
Yeah.
And then Jay's one job is to go pick them up.
That's his big job. His appointment every day goes, well, I'm going to pick up the kids at 2, and I want to get there ahead of the other moms. And then he just kind of has that dopey grin. But I know, right, Violetta? It's like, even like they're driving to check out the new house, and he pulls off the side road because he goes, I think I saw some turkeys. And then he pulls out his binoculars to look at the turkeys.
Why did the all the trailers for this or the promos for it show goats? He's holding goats.
They have goats. Well,
Do they have goats already?
Here's an explanation of the goats.
Spoiler alert.
Sorry, we haven't caught up.
Oh my God. This is Nugget.
I'm just a baby.
Why do we have goats?
They're fertilizing your concrete there.
You mean they're pooping everywhere? You want some goats now?
Yeah, I love them.
Well, you gotta go look at this house that I found.
Why can't we just have goats here?
It's against the law.
I mean, I love goats, but I don't love moving.
That's fine. You just have to go look at it once, and you can have many goats as your little heart desires.
turns out the new house that he wants her to look at actually has room for goats.
Oh.
And, you know, goat also means greatest of all time.
Of course
and
it does.
Jay will never be mentioned in the same word as goat, except for in this context.
That's so. why he likes him. He likes the association with the word goat. But that belongs to Tom Brady, as we all know.
There you go.
So it's not...
I'm telling you, very cavallari.
It's kind of addicting. And my favorite part about it is the way he interacts with her employees. He is so rude to these women.
But you kind of have to grind your way through all, like, the basic reality TV garbage to get to the
That's true.
You know, fortunately, there's some Bears blogs out there that, like, every Monday morning, they just have pieced together every Cutler cut.
Yeah, because so he gets, watch, like, cuts, cause he gets about 12 minutes. Because that's true. Because in the meantime, you have to deal with Shannon and Taylor and the other Taylor. They all
And her boyfriend
and Reagan. Yeah.
So does he have that wonderfully indifferent look on his face for all of the cuts?
Yes.
Like, okay.
But we kind of share his disdain for her friend because they're worthy of it. So, they're like a bunch of Bachelor contestants without a bachelor.
In one of the episodes, he teaches them how not to park on the grass because they keep coming to the house because they don't have an office yet.
Mm-hmm.
And he takes one of them outside and she's like, I'm not the one that parked on the grass. He's like, well, we're going to teach it to everyone. Take these cones and we don't park where the cones are.
Then they go to their friend's party and Jay's like, I'm not going to that party.
No interest whatsoever.
Kristen goes by herself.
It's so
he
great.
Is the king of not caring. So why do we care about him?
Because it's great. And at one point, like, he refuses to say hi to her friends and he goes, well, I'm more of a bye guy than a hi guy. He knows he's like,
what?
He doesn't want to say hello to him.
Literally, they walk in the room and
he doesn't
stares.
Say hi to him. Just the ass you thought he'd be. It's fantastic.
And does he ever show any sort of love for his
nice,
wife?
Yeah, he's nice towards his wife. Like, he was complimenting her on something she was wearing or something. I mean, there's some sweet moments where you're like, oh, that's probably what he's like more often when the cameras aren't on. But
and he likes any meat that has been killed. Elk meat,
oh, God,
deer meat.
Yeah,
he's
he
all
ate,
about
like, game.
Yeah, he likes to eat game.
Mm. It just sound it doesn't it, I don't it doesn't
I'm
sound right.
You.
It doesn't
you have
sound
to
right.
watch it. Honestly, it's actually pretty good.
I think he you know, he's never won a Super Bowl trophy, never won an MVP, he couldn't get an Emmy.
Does he talk about football in the series at all? Like, does he ever say, show like flashbacks or pictures or nothing?
He's like, Mick Cutler's gone full country now.
Yeah,
like the way he dresses, you know, he's all into hunting and watching deer videos, and now he's going to move Kristen Cavallari to a farm.
Doesn't seem like, it's
he
almost
got
like
100 plus million and he walked away.
What was
baby.
The Zsa Zsa Gabor thing when you get the like
Green
the fancy
yeah,
chick who brings
that,
her
yeah.
try to bring her to the farm? It seems like she's fighting a little bit this whole goats chickens thing.
If you thought that Jay Cutler was not the kind of guy that really really cared what people thought about him and really didn't care about his teammates and really didn't want to win,
care
you
all.
Were right.
I did think that.
He's
and
like,
so
you were
that's,
right.
Yeah.
He's a disgruntled 80-year-old man who's retired already.
But he's like 36.
35.
I kind of aspire to be him. To be honest, like just that real casual,
that's
relaxed
exactly
lifestyle.
Right.
He's living the good life.
She's
right
like,
now.
Have you thought about life after football? And he goes, my plan this year is to not work at all.
Oh, he's like, that's kind of the point.
Well, he's made like $120 million. He doesn't need to work ever,
life.
So good for him. I just think at some point you got to be passionate about something, don't
nah,
you?
Nah, don't care.
Your
has
wife,
he ever been
your
passionate
kids?
About anything?
No, he hasn't.
Smoking Jay. Smoking
Jay. He has not. That's the problem. Did we get to see his backside? Does she take pictures of his bare butt or this stuff? No,
because
she did that.
He did get a haircut because he mostly wears hats in the whole show and he got a haircut and she didn't notice. He's like, hello, one of my appointments today.
Yeah, that was like
haircut.
His real busy week. He got a haircut and
he
picked the kids up
there.
From school.